Yeah. All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up. See this? This is my boomstick. The 12-gauge double-barreled Remington. S-Mart's top of the line. You can find this in the sporting goods department. That's right, this sweet baby was made in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Retails for about $109.95. It's got a walnut stock, cobalt blue steel, and a hair trigger. That's right. Shop smart. Shop S-Mart. You got that?
Yeah.
Now I swear, the next one of you primates even touches me. Yeah!
Talk about how I get back home.
And now, coming to you from the Super Digital Studio, deep within the broadcasting multiplex of CBS Radio. This is the Rick Emerson Show.
That's right. That's great. All right. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say Hail to the King. I'm not going to say... That was just Pillow Talk, baby. God damn, I love that movie. That's among the best films ever made. That's among the very finest motion pictures ever to grace God's green earth, what that is. All right, it's 503-733-2970. That is the phone number for this, the Rick Emerson program, which is beginning now at 3 minutes and 42 seconds after the hour of 11 in this, the month of June, in the year of our Lord, 2007. Thank you for coming along, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of AM 970, Solid State Radio. It is Friday, and welcome to day 12 right here in the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. This email says, Rick, thank you for remembering today was Bruce Campbell's birthday. Well, it's what we do, sir. 503-733-2970. If you'd like to be part of today's broadcast, that is 503-733-2970. You can also email if you like with your comments, your clarifications, your conventions, your 2 cents, your what have you. It's Rick at RickEmerson.com. Rick at RickEmerson.com. I'm thinking that bluff holds together. I have no idea. This is not Bruce Campbell's birthday, is it? I got an email from some chick.
It is totally and completely his birthday.
Okay, the odds of that are one in 365. That was a total accident. I should dump this whole conversation.
You should dump it.
No. I don't want to pretend to be smarter than I am. I do enough of that
June
already.
June 22nd, 1958.
That is so great. I had no idea. I swear to God, I had no idea that today was Bruce Campbell's birthday and that a girl had to point it out to me. No disrespect, but seriously. That it had to be pointed out to me by Jennifer something. Jennifer, well, I shouldn't give her last name, probably. She might be emailing from work. Jennifer emails it. Not even Aaron pointed it out. Jennifer says, hey, you observed Bruce Campbell's birthday. All caps, you rule. Well, if only inadvertently so. Really, it was like 5 minutes before the top of the show. Aaron Geek in the City had sent me a few movie clips, and I didn't have time to access them. One of them I didn't want to play out of context because Sarah's never seen the film. He sent me the Barbara Billingsley stewardess. I speak jive, which is one of the greatest scenes in the history. You want to talk about a thing that is just you will never get old. I mean, it's 2007, and that's still funny. Anyway, so I was going to play the Barbara Billingsley translating the jive talk on Airplane, but then I thought, well, Sarah's never seen the movie, and is it going to be less funny to everybody? And we're really only about amusing ourselves. Really, it's only incidentally that we amuse other people. And so I was just looking for movie speeches, and they're all incredibly profane. That's the other thing. I don't know why it is that the only movie speeches, largely, that are on the net, the ones that are just filled with profanity. You go on the net, man, you can find 100 different versions of that Glengarry Glen Ross speech. You can find a million guys who posted all the entire opening from Patton. You try to find something you can play on the air, that is a fool's errand, my friend. But then we found the Army of Darkness speech, and we played it. I swear to God, I wasn't even halfway through playing it, and I got an email. Somebody tell me it's Bruce Campbell's birthday. 1 in 365, those odds. We really do. Maybe I was imbued by some higher spirit. Maybe there was some force. Maybe the universe was wishing Bruce Campbell a happy birthday through us. That's so great. You know, it's going to be a great day. That little bit of serendipity right there is a harbinger of a fantastic day. It's 503-733-2970. You want to join us with your comments, your clarifications, your Bruce Campbell observations, your what have you. Well, I think he might be on the Court and Fat Boy show, I think in the next month or so. I think they might be having him on this month. Because they're doing that They Call Me Ash movie, or They Call Me Bruce movie, or whatever the hell it is. It's kind of a Galaxy Quest meets Evil Dead kind of a thing. Because he lives in Eugene or whatever the hell. As I'm sure you all probably knew. You all probably knew it was his birthday, too. 503-733-2970 today. It is Friday. 503-733-2970. You'd like to call in. Scotty will screen you, get your information, pass you along. You can weigh in on your what have you. If you want to email anybody in the program today, it is rick@rickemerson.com, sarah@970.am, tim@970.am, or scottyj@970.am. The first call of today is from someone who says, I'm reading this now off the screen, I have very interesting Hitler news.
Oh, gee.
And so it begins. Okay. I meant to sort through this pile of stuff that I have over here, but I haven't done any of it yet. This huge pile of... Well, I'm just going to do a random news story right now. A random news story from the growing pile of news over here to my immediate right. Then we'll move on. Rumors that pop star Christina Aguilera is in the family way. Maybe much more than that. According to the New York Post, page 6, the singer is 3 months pregnant. She's been telling friends, but waiting until she's far enough along to make an... Your friends never do that, though. Your friends... You know, you're always supposed to wait until you're 3 months along because, you know, in case things go badly or things don't work out or... take an ill-advised roller coaster ride somewhere. You're never supposed to, you know, tell anybody that. But if people never do that. People never wait 3 months. There's always that, well, we really should wait until we're 12 weeks along before we tell anybody. Because I can't wait to call my girlfriend. And then they get on the phone and they tell everybody. So Christina Aguilera is telling everybody that she is pregnant. The child will be the first for the 26-year-old Aguilera and her husband, Jordan Bretman. You know, I don't even really know if she's attractive. Christina Aguilera is one of those women that I realize now that I have never seen her without an inch of makeup on her face. Ever.
Well, she's one of those girls that is, like, really put together well. And I saw a picture of her yesterday because I've been reading those pregnancy rumors, too.
Uh-huh.
And she's thick thin. I don't see it.
No.
She is thinner than she's ever been.
Yeah,
It doesn't seem plausible.
One of those things where the baby's going to have to eat one of her lungs to stay alive. 503-733-2970. There's a random news story from the pile of stuff. We'll get to more later on. Also coming up today, CNN. We got a huge announcement, by the way. I feel ashamed. I was so distracted by the fact that we inadvertently nailed Bruce Campbell's birthday. I told Tim about this announcement just about 2 minutes before we went on the air today. It's very exciting, isn't it, Tim?
I'm shocked.
Wait, did your microphone
work?
Yay!
I don't know if it's on or not.
It is.
It is. The light doesn't work, but the mic does.
That's not very helpful. So you won't know when you're on the air.
But I am on the air.
You won't know when you're speaking, but you are. You'll have to rely on external. This is like Rush Limbaugh, how he did that show for 8 months. Had to rely on other people to tell him whether or not he was actually speaking. Am I here, huh? Yes, Rush. You're on the air. I mean, now I'm sorry. I shouldn't do that. All right, so we got a huge announcement. A huge announcement. I don't even have a huge announcement noise. But we'll have to find one, because we got a big announcement we're going to make.
And we've sort of been nailing this down. The rumor was sort of swirling, circulating around upstairs inside the promotions department. But we finally got some confirmation on it. So we got a big announcement we're going to be making about something that's going to be a thing that we're going to be doing. I think we're going to be bringing a place we're going to be at. A little a one night only kind of event that we're going to be.
Who's the most excited person about this?
You. And let me just say this. You were excited about it before you even knew that we were involved. Let me just say that. This is
It's something that I was already planning on perhaps doing anyway.
Sarah was already planning on being part of this event before, and then I was like, well, you'll never guess who's actually going to be involved with that event, and then all right. Well, I'm getting all gibbered up, so I got to.
On Twitter.
Bring myself back down. So we have a big announcement coming about something that the AM 970 is going to be doing. So we'll announce that I don't know before the bottom of the hour. We'll try to get to that. Lisa Goddard going to be joining us today from the Hill. Lisa Goddard. She's going to be talking about, I swear to God, fat little children. What effects do images on television and the movies have on obese children? So there you go.
None. They'll keep eating.
None.
Absolutely none.
If there's lard in the cupboard, it'll go down their gullets. That's it. None. Zero. It will have no effect at all. So we'll talk to Lisa Goddard about that. We'll talk to Jim Roop. Jim Roop is he's talking a couple of things. I guess I think they're rolling now in the Spectre thing. I think the prosecution's done, and then I think Spectre's defense team is getting ready to pick everything apart. And then apparently they got some hospital there. And I know that a lot of these stories are coming out because of the Michael Moore thing. And we'll talk about Michael Moore here in just a second. But I know a lot of these healthcare stories, you know, it's that thing. Whenever there's like when Snakes on a Plane was coming out and suddenly you couldn't pick up the newspaper, there was snake news everywhere you went. So there's the Michael Moore film coming out. And so they've got Roop talking about this hospital, which admittedly is apparently not like a paragon of healthcare. The Martin Luther King Jr. Harbor Hospital in L.A. where that woman died, like, in the ER. And she kept, and I think she was actually calling 911. I think she was actually calling 911. On a cell phone from her chair in the emergency room as, like, doctors were walking by her and refusing to help. I may be wrong about that, but I do believe that that's very close to the real story. I think she was, like, bleeding out of her eyes, sitting there in a chair. Hello, hello? I'm seeing the white tunnel. Hello? You know, and I think at one point she actually started calling for help on her phone from inside the emergency room. And they got a whole bunch of problems anyway in Los Angeles. Isn't Los Angeles where they were just dumping a bunch of those patients in like a back alley somewhere? I mean, it's just so off the charts insane. Well, we're not really able to take care of these people properly today because they have no insurance. So we could either discharge them through the front or we could put them in a van and kick them out somewhere in Oakland. Let's do that. Then the problem just works itself out. Anyway, so Jim Roop is going to, and we'll see what his thoughts on the. I did pass as one journalist to another. I did pass along to Jim Roop the information about that leaked copy of the O.J. Simpson book, which is all over the interwebs and the so forth. And I did get a guy who worked at a publishing company. I got an email from a guy who worked at a publishing company who examined the book and had some thoughts about where it might have come from. So we'll talk to Roop about that later on. I've kind of put him on the trail of that because that's kind of an interesting story. What else do we got? Scott Daly will be here sometime in the 2 o'clock hour. He's going to be reviewing 1408, which is the new John Cusack film, which is it's John Cusack and Samuel L. Jackson's based on a Stephen King story or novel or whatever.
That's there about Christopher Columbus.
No. 1492. Yeah, with Tom Selleck. No, it's 1408 looks really. I don't know how it looks, actually. I'm not sure if it looks great or terrible. I've seen the trailer 2-3 times, and every time I see it, it's sort of like spinning. It's like spinning a random wheel of audience reaction inside my soul. I'm never really sure how I feel about it. Thank you. Tim just very slowly turned his computer monitor toward me.
I just got a very special email.
To show me the iPhone guided tour email that he just received from Apple Computer. All right. Whatever. You don't even want to know. Well, you do know. You know all about the hate mail that I get every time I open my mouth about Apple Computers. I have such a tangled emotional relationship with Apple Computers. I really do. I mean,
For as much as I make fun of that company, I mean, they're really, I do feel such a weird, fierce admiration for Steve Jobs and what that guy accomplishes there.
Well, I don't have to talk about it now.
Let's see. So Scott Daly's going to be, but the point is that Scott will be reviewing 1408, and he's seeing Sicko right now. The new Michael Moore film Sicko is screening as we speak.
And very envious.
Yeah, well, someone had, well, the same day I got the copy of the OJ book, it's now no longer possible to keep any media, from just being pirated. So the same day I got a copy of the OJ book, I opened my emails, I'm going to click here to see the new Michael Moore film. And then I was actually going to put it on one of them CDs, one of them CD-ROMs, but it was like the picture didn't want to come out correctly. But he's seeing it right now. So we'll have a review of the new Michael Moore film, and we will have a review of 1408. Coming up today. We'll talk briefly to Dennis Pitzenbarger, see what's coming up on the car show this weekend. I will finally get to this little bit of news about the second worst story you've ever heard. And I think Scotty's assembling some top five, but it's completely and totally out of my hands because I failed to give him a topic. I didn't come up with anything. I had nothing. It's a total blank. So Scotty is assembling some sort of top five right now, but I don't know what it is. It may, in fact, be a mystery top five, in which it is incumbent upon us to put together the thread linking all five songs. So, I don't know. I'm not really sure about that. All right. And we've got these calls and so forth and the whatnot. And anyway, it's 503-733-2970. Joined today, as are we always, by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon, who brought with you today to work.
I have my Muppet today.
This is because it is. Am I wrong about this? It is National Bring Your Dog to Work Day today.
It is.
Now, did anybody else do that? And the thing is, I haven't seen, what's it, Shelby, the border collie, that's always lurking around here.
Maybe she's taking the day off.
So
people can parade their children around one day of the year. I'm going to bring my dog.
You know, there's nothing that irritates people with children more than that. Let me just tell you, which is fine with me. Doesn't matter. I don't care. I'm just saying, do you ever want to see child having people just go crazy? Do one of two things. If you are a child free, here's how you can irritate your child having. Well, if you want to irritate people who have children, just say a lot of things like, I don't know, we're thinking about going out of town for 10 days. Just, you know, but we may not. I don't know. We'll decide next week. just drop a lot of comments like that real casually. B, refer to yourself as child-free instead of childless. Lara has a friend that just goes mental. She just goes like white-hot nuclear whenever we say that, whenever we call ourselves child-free. Because it's like calling yourself cancer-free, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You don't say you're cancerless, you go, I am now cancer-free for 1 year. So if you say child-free, it makes breeding types.
Well,
really
I finally good. Reached that point in my life. I'm 26, and the baby parade has started.
The baby parade.
All the baby farmers of America are now standing up. All my friends are knocked up.
Aren't they waiting until 3 months to tell you?
And I'm looking at all of these inside pictures of their stomachs and whatever they are.
Are they showing you the sonograms or whatever the hell it is?
Yeah.
Yeah, how do you feel about that?
It's so weird.
A lot of MySpace pages being updated with, like, bassinet themes.
It's weird.
Uh-huh.
And my friend knows who she is.
Yeah.
No, it's exciting. It's going to be interesting to see little people that look like my friends.
Yeah.
But I know.
It's going to be especially exciting when you don't see them anymore and you have to get a whole group of new friends to replace them because they're too busy and tired and broke to do anything. I'm not making fun. I'm really not. I'm just saying it happens to all of us. If you don't have kids...
I just didn't think I was at that point in my life. And
oh, no.
I totally am.
You're...
Every day I find a new...
You're totally at that point.
I know. But I'm not, so that's why it's just weird to me.
It happens.
Every day I find out another one of my buddies is knocked up.
Yeah. Well, it's only going to get worse.
Then they'll start asking you where they can find Mother's Hours at the local retail establishment.
Mother's Hours?
Mother's Hours.
Do you get discounts if you pretend to be a mother? I mean, if you are a mother?
Well,
it's hard to tell with some people.
Especially in Oregon. Have you ever seen... Look, and we all have. Have you ever seen the person where you... I mean, I've never actually done the thing where you say... And when are you expecting? And then you find out they're not. But I know people who have. I know one guy, and that always sounds like an urban legend, but I know one guy who did that, who was talking to a woman, and she apparently was obese, but in a very specific way. It was like just the front, just the gut area. She had like a... And normally you don't see women with a beer gut, but apparently this woman was different. She was the exception. And he said, so, I mean, are you... When are you due? She's not due. You wouldn't due for anything. She wouldn't do for anything but liposuction.
I'm due for Izzy's buffet.
Totally. I'm doing the bulk foods aisle of the Winco any minute now. Okay.
I know, I don't know what to
say. No, there's nothing I can say.
And I've lost, like, 2 drinking buddies.
Yeah. Well, because they're drinking for 2 now, Sarah, so they got to... No, there's nothing I can say to make you feel better.
There's nothing.
Look, you're 26, I'm 34, Tim is 37. We're all... With every year, it only gets worse, and I don't mean to be a jerk about it, but
right,
it's true.
We were talking about this earlier, because I'm like, oh, well, it'll all be over soon. You're like, no, it's just beginning.
No, it's, I mean, the friends, I mean, first, they get married, and then they get kids, and then it's like, and then they're just exhausted.
And then
all
their
the time,
memories,
you know?
The memories of the younger days are replaced by these images from the 1950s. They come out of black and white television.
Totally.
Their own youth didn't exist. They've adopted this 1950s image of their own younger days.
Exactly. No, totally. You know, and then they start saying things like, well,
so much sex I
have. Totally. That's exactly what it is.
We got to make sex less fun.
That's
the third child.
That's exactly. Well, I mean, you know, this neighborhood has really just gone downhill. And, I mean, we really want to live someplace that's... I mean, I know I was always one of those people that said I wasn't going to live in the suburbs. But I really do want to say, look, it's close to schools. And I mean, the kids can walk around, and it's safe. And I mean, you know, I think it's important for them to be around kids that are their own age. And I just, the city's just not,
well,
not a good place for those. And you're just sitting there in your head going, Jesus, who are you? Where is this?
And
you
they're not
going
to want to hang out with me anymore because I'm a bad influence.
No.
I'm just going to go over there with a bottle of wine and a pack of syrup. Like, Auntie Sarah's here.
Totally.
I'll drink and watch
people with our children are immature and have yet to grow up.
Honey, I want you to know that I didn't plant that statement in Tim's mouth. Tim just volunteered that statement.
Uh-oh.
No, I, There was... Yes?
What?
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 What did you just say?
No, Tim was just noting. Okay, before we do anything else, Tim, what stories are you working on today?
Oh, I'm glad you asked. There are just too many to mention. A driver falls asleep and crashes into a Loa tanning salon in the seemingly safe suburbs.
Oh, great.
Thrill rides are shut down nationwide after a child's feet are cut off at a Six Flags. A man is severely beaten with a baseball bat on the coast. Crime continues to pay for Paris Hilton. Bitter ABC claims it was outbid by NBC for an exclusive Hilton interview. Paris Pokey Picks go for another $300,000. And you're ready for Kurt Cobain lunchboxes and toys, thanks to Courtney Love's marketing deals.
They already got that Kurt Cobain action figure. Sounds like a joke. It's really an inaction figure. It's mopes. Now with G.I. Joe moping.
Does he take up a hypodermic needle? Is that the action that he's engaged?
It's kung fu injecting action. You just press the button and the doll sits there. It does nothing. All of this stuff to talk about. I forgot to feed you a headline. I was going to feed you a headline last night. Laura and I were sitting around last night, and I was scanning the news, and there was that story about that thing, that Six Flags amusement. I was going to feed you the following tease. Six Flags, no legs, a maiming in Kentucky. You can use that later if you want. Six Flags, no legs. A maiming in Kentucky.
No legs.
Maiming in Kentucky. All right. No, the only reason I mentioned it, we're so behind now already because I got these calls. We got Lisa coming up. We were just talking moments ago, and then somebody has advice for Sarah about kids. Okay.
Is it somebody with a kid saying that, oh, if they're yours, you'll love them.
As soon as you look into their eyes, you'll feel different.
My mom still does that to me. She's like, Sarah, you don't understand.
See, you know, the great...
You just don't know.
You know, the problem with you, Sarah, is you don't have more siblings. Because if you had more siblings, this would have been, like, preferably older siblings. This would be taken care of. My
Heather
mom...
Heather hasn't ruled out... I think Heather's going to be the birther.
She's the hope of the family.
She totally is. She has the long-term boyfriend. Now she's, you know, starting to settle down, and I'm just, like, the nutty one.
My mom has no interest in me having kids. Doesn't care. My mom does not give a rip if I have kids or not. You know what I mean? Doesn't care. She has like 80 grandchildren already? Because I got 5 siblings. So, I mean, I got 5 siblings. My mom has got more descendants than she could possibly list at this point. So, I mean, my mom's got great grandchildren at this point. So she doesn't care if I have, mom, I'm not going to kids. Fine. You know, she doesn't matter at all. Doesn't care. No, we were just talking about kids just now. And Tim said, as you age, your friends get married, your friends have children, and then they start to shift their thinking. And suddenly, in the opinion of your friends and contemporaries,
People without children are immature and don't want to grow up. Which dovetails into, it really wasn't an argument, but it was this.
Please tell me that Laura doesn't want to have kids.
No, it's not that. It's
okay.
Just, no. It's I was lamenting, though, to my wife the other day, this is sort of a variation on the same theme, that a lot of people I knew or know, you know, are sort of moving on with settling down, growing up, becoming more traditional, kids, family, marriage, whatever. And I was like, oh, where are they, you know, what is happening? All my rowdy friends have settled down, as Hank Jr. would say. Anyway, and I made an observation very much along the lines of, you know, what we were talking about here. And Laura actually said, she said, well, you know, growing up and becoming more responsible is something that most people think they ought to do at some point. And then she just gave me the long stare. And I just, you know, so no, it's true. That's a thing you hear more and more often. Suddenly your youthful charm is just your refusal to grow up. So, you know, whatever. I mean, what are you going to do? I am a 34-year-old man standing here in a spy versus spy shirt. So, you know what? Everybody can just suck that if they don't like it. All right, 503-733-2970. I have no idea how we're going to get all this done. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hey.
Hey, this is Charlie calling from the Coop.
Okay.
And my advice to Sarah, when people say something like, you know, well, why don't you have kids yet, or when are you going to have kids? What I use, my husband and I have been married for 12 years, and of course that's the question everybody always wants to know. And
sure.
We don't want kids. We're good without kids. We
you know, they secretly think you're barren.
Well, you know what? I started doing that. I started going, oh, we can't have kids.
That's so great, and then they can't press you on it.
Seriously, the look on their face, they're like, oh, I'm sorry. But one of the things I like to say that I like to laugh about is when they say, well, don't you want kids? I say, oh, no, kids poop.
Oh, that's so great. It is true.
Awesome.
Do they ever? Look, and I'm not trying to be a jerk about people who want kids. There are people who literally, you know, I know people who are like, you know what? I've wanted kids ever since I was whatever. I feel like I'd be a good parent. It's a thing I want to do. And, you know, that's fine. That's totally fine. But, you know, there's people who don't. And that's all I'm saying. That's the only distinction I'm making. And I think you're with me on that, Charlie.
Absolutely.
I'm barren. All right. Thank you.
Have a good one. Bye.
Her insides were a rocky place where my seed could find no purchase. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick. This is Alexander.
What's up?
Hey, we have a friend, you know, on the subject of people ask, well, what do you do, and, you know, to the fat people?
Uh-huh.
We have a friend who got pregnant. 2 weeks into the pregnancy, she started telling everybody.
Oh, yeah, and that's how God will come and take that baby right out of your womb, you do that.
Well, there were several people that kind of said, well, you know, we thought you were starting to look kind of pregnant.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's
yeah, no, see, there's...
Yeah.
No, it's not
bad. All right, thank you. Yeah. Now, in 2 weeks, you're not starting to look kind of pregnant. 2 weeks. If you look pregnant in 2 weeks, you just need to put down the Funyuns. All right. Well, okay, there you go. I have no time. I have no time for anything here. But we got all of this news to get.
And just remember, when you're in your deathbed, your children will be 3,000 miles away and won't be able to afford an airline ticket to see you. You'll die alone.
That's what I hear, too. It's like, who's going to come and visit you on your deathbed?
Seriously.
Who's going to take care of you?
I want people to come see me while I'm on my deathbed. Will you come see me when I'm withered and can't pee correctly? Will you spend a lot of time staring at me as I'm wasting away in a bed, looking like gray fast food hamburger with tubes jammed in my rectum?
You look great.
He looks so peaceful.
Why don't we all just make
another couple of weeks of rehab and you'll be in good. I mean, seriously, F that.
We should all just make a pact. If we're all still alive at the same time and one of us is on our deathbed, we'll hang out with each other.
Totally, that's it. Well, no, I've told, you know, and I've told Laura this too, and I've said, because I
have my Jell-O cubes.
Why don't you see his idiot fat grandchildren running around the room, knocking things over, bumping into your life support machine?
I mean, you're not even going to talk to you anyway. They're like, say goodbye to Grandma.
We'll see you tomorrow.
I don't want to miss Grandma.
Grandma smells of death.
So seriously, you might have people around you, but they don't want to be there.
Oh, no. When you go to look, that's the other thing. Yeah, when you're...
I remember being dragged to see my grandparents, my uncles, my aunts, and seriously, it's like you could smell the reaping. I mean, it was just, and just like polygrip and stool and ammonia and just doom, all of it in the air, and just looking at your watch and just, and everything in those hospitals and nursing homes all just smell of like bad mashed potatoes and gravy all the time, and just, I mean, there's just some horrible moments.
And the look of horror in their eyes.
and of course, and you're right, the kids are just sitting there looking at their watch.
Seriously.
You know, they don't want to see your ass.
I don't want to be surrounded by a bunch of people who are required to be there. Like, they just feel like they have to.
Get on the floor
really
and play with your Hot Wheels.
like they're just there so they can justify divvying up my possessions
exactly,
once I'm
so
dead.
Exactly, so they can feel better.
F that. Now, I told Laura this because I was joking about how, you know, the cancer is going to kill me someday. And I always said, you know what, here's the thing. The day that I check into the cancer ward, you know, to begin the long slide towards death, you are forbidden, not her, but I'm like, people are forbidden to see me. Like, that's it. Like, you come say your goodbyes and I'm at the house, then I'm going to pack up my valise and I'm going to go to the hospital and no one's allowed to see me. If I have my druthers, they won't even know where I am. They won't know where I am. They won't have my phone number to my room. Won't you want loved ones to come sit and stare at you for a while as you slowly waste away? No, I don't. Thank you so much.
As they watch that little plastic bag fill up with your bodily waste on the side of the bed.
That's really palatable.
When they're sitting there eating snacks, passing Pringles back and forth.
That's how I want to be remembered. Remember me as I am now, unable to defecate correctly.
As you sit on furniture that wasn't the Greyhound bus station.
Totally. Seriously, nurse coming in and asking about the healing of my bed sores. Oh, God damn. Screw that. Well, we've talked long enough that Lisa Goddard's now here, and we've blown through our 20 break. Let's just get this call, and then we'll talk to Lisa. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hi, Rick.
Hey.
I just want to say one of the things that they don't tell you about, too, when you have kids is that then you have to deal with other kids' parents, and that is quite possibly the worst part of having children.
Oh, I know, because your kids' friends, their parents become your friends whether you want it or not.
Yeah, and other kids' parents suck.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And is everyone judging each other on, like, how they raised their kids? And I can't believe that's the way they talk to their kids.
Totally. And then as Tim pointed out, in your head, suddenly your own childhood becomes this idyllic black and white place where there were picket fences and Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon are running around everywhere. And you're like, well, I just don't want you hanging out with that Jim. He seems like a bad sort. You know what I mean? And then you become one of those dick parents that, like, complaining about some other family that you don't want your kids spending time with. And you just turn into everything you despised about your own parents. So,
well, yeah, and then you have other kids over at your house and they're not following your rules. And then you have to discipline somebody else's kids. And it's just stuff. I just hate dealing with other kids and other kids' parents.
Disciplining someone else's kid, that's got to be the trickiest area of all.
That must be tough.
I don't even know how you do that. I mean, because you can't. I mean, obviously, you can't whack him around. I mean, even though I know that's what any number of people in the audience are probably inclined to do. Some little bastard comes over and breaks one of your possessions. You just want to give him a mouthful of fist. You can't do that. And so, but you can't. What do you do? Just send him home?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. You know, and then your own kid's pissed off at you, and then the other family is angry at you because you're passing some judgment on their child. So, All right. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
Scotty's typing on the screen comments that indicates that he believes that we are, I think he believes that we're a little neurotic. or perhaps, whatever. Well, hell, let's just, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome. The ripcord on this whole thing. From the Hill, CNN radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Hello there.
Hey, what is going on?
Well, I don't even remember how this conversation started.
I was doing and I said all my friends were knocked up.
Oh, yeah. Like half an hour ago. I said, so, Sarah, how's life? Well, all my friends are pregnant. And then I was noting that, that Tim and I are in our 30s and Sarah's 26 and so forth. But I was saying with every passing year, more of your friends are married or impregnated or have spawned several times. And they just start to fall away from you. They still consider themselves like in your brain, there are several categories. There's work associates, there's friends, there's romantic partners, there's relatives. You categorize people into certain whatever groups. And there's lots of people that probably still consider themselves your friends, and you might even consider them friends or social acquaintances. But really, it just gets ratcheted down so far. I mean, really, it just that dial gets turned down to where it is almost indiscernible because they are just preoccupied. And again, I'm not passing judgment. If people want to have kids, that's great. It's for some folks, not for us. But it's just their life just becomes going home and feeding and changing this squalling thing for about 18 years, if not longer.
Right.
And really, they just become friends like in name only. They sort of become like these walking mom and dad zombies that you just have. It's like having somebody who's gone to prison in your family, and you just sort of have to, you know, just sort of have to take it that you'll see them in a few years. You know what I mean?
Right. I kind of think this is a bit of a modern phenomenon. I mean, I think parents, your lives have always changed dramatically when you have kids. But, you know, my parents were old school. You know, my siblings are a lot older than I am. And so my parents, you know, by the time I came along, I mean, they really, mom was not really cooking. You know, there was
right.
a lot of Leave It to Beaver stuff going on. But even before that, when my siblings were young and they were in the military, you know, they said they had parties all the time. Just they had adults over, and the kids were not allowed in the house until the party was over. Like at 9, they had to go right to bed. The kids were sent out to play. You know, like the parents are just like, all right, go out and play, come back for dinner, and then we'll see you. You know, there just was not this kind of intertwining of the lives between adults and children.
Well, and it does seem like, and I say this as a man who relentlessly panders to this target demographic, there is this new phenomenon recently, I would think anyway, especially with men. There has emerged, and I am a living, breathing archetype of this, there has emerged a new breed of American male, and that is the adultolescent. And
what? Say that what?
Adultolescent.
Okay.
And I'm not making that up. I did read it somewhere, but I will say that I use it more than probably most people, because I don't mean it as a knock, by the way. Adultolescent, I think it's a really accurate term, and I think we all know these guys. And I am one of these guys. I mean, as I get older, I'm really just gonna be pathetic. But now I'm an adultolescent. And it is, you know, I'm a 34-year-old guy. And as I noted before, now granted, I have a job that maybe enables this, as my wife might say, a little bit more. She did use the phrase, what was the phrase that my wife used the other night to describe my job? Something about enabling my ability to tread water in a sea of retarded adolescents.
Oh, no.
Something like that.
No.
But in any event, so I realize that maybe I'm allowed to color outside the lines, at least at this point in my life, a little bit more than some folks, because I'm not working in a cubicle or whatever. But, you know, I'm a 34-year-old man. I'm wearing Chuck Taylor high top all-stars and a Spy versus Spy shirt. You know, you go to my house, and probably 85% of my disposable income is spent on my DVD collection, my computer, or my Xbox. You know, and there are no graham crackers or grape jelly anywhere in my house. So, but I think that people who are in their 30s, which is traditionally a marriage, child-having, child-rearing, settle down, get a pipe, and take the 8:15 to the city to work at the advertising agency, that era of the American parent is sort of gone by the wayside, I think, in many ways. And there are a lot of people who are still in their 30s, still wanting to, you know, they still have all the traits of a dude who's like 21 years of age.
Right.
And
we
all know a guy like this who's 35 years of age, maybe has a career, maybe has a house, might even have a family, but he's still got like a PlayStation and snowboards and, and whatever, and sits around like, you know, collecting Beavis and Butthead DVDs. And I don't think that guy existed. I have the very strong feeling. Like, did you ever do this? Did you ever think about what your parents were doing when they were the age you are now?
Oh, yes, definitely.
I mean, because I saw my birth certificate a couple years ago. I forget why, but I saw my birth certificate, and I was looking, and it lists the age of the parents. And my mom is much older than my dad. My mom is 12 years older than my dad. But it was showing my birth certificate and when and where I was born. And then it was listing ages of parents. And for my mom was 36, I think, when I was born, or 35. And so it was like mother's age, 35. Father's age, 23. That is more than a decade younger than I am now.
Wow.
By the time my dad was my age, I was 11 years old. I was in whatever, that's like sixth grade, something like that.
Right.
And I remember sixth grade. I mean, you know, so that is a little freaky.
And I don't remember my dad being as relentlessly juvenile and immature as I frequently am. And I know a lot of guys, and again, I'm not saying this as a knock, I know a lot of guys my age who spend, I think, way more time on stuff that might be considered trivial, immature, silly, whatever, than parents of a previous generation. And I'm not saying it's good or bad. I think it's just different. I think that we have delayed the onset of things that are traditionally considered to be grown-up traits in a lot of ways.
Right. Think about, for instance, Donna Reed. You know, I don't know if you've ever caught the Donna Reed show.
Yeah.
You know, she was like 36 or 37 when she was on that show.
Yeah. No, I
she was just, and that life is so far, I can't even comprehend. Putting on that apron and chugging around. I mean, great. I mean, I'm glad. It's great.
But it's the fact that, yeah, I mean, well, look, I'll tell you this. I have a friend of mine.
That's not a knock on stay-at-home moms. That's a whole different situation.
No, they're two different phenomena.
Right. That's completely separate.
But, you know, it's like
stay-at-home moms have a whole different scenario of pressures and dynamics now as well.
I'll tell you this right now. I have any number of guys, and again, these are my people. I have any number of guys within the sound of my voice right now who are married, have children, probably paying on a mortgage, probably paying on a car, and yet they are putting money away on the side, putting a little bit of money away each paycheck for that brand new Star Wars tattoo that they're going to get on the one tiny area of blank skin on their body that is not already covered with pictures of Boba Fett and Darth Vader.
Exactly.
And I don't think that happened 20 or 30 years ago. I really don't. I think that there was, and maybe I'm wrong about this, and I wasn't there, but I do think that back in the day, as they say, that there was a sort of a switch, and you became a parent or became an adult, and suddenly suddenly your life just went to gray and white. And I don't think that happens anymore, and I don't know whether that's because of marketing or whether they've figured out that they can sort of keep guys interested in sort of, you know, in sort of the recreational fun side of life, that they can get more money out of them for a longer period of time, or whether it's like a birth control thing. I don't know whether this is the delayed impact of the pill and the fact that that people feel like they have more control over their destiny.
We're living longer, so we're marrying later.
Maybe. I don't know. It is really interesting, and it's now consumed almost an entire hour of the program, but it's just because it is a really interesting makeup on this show. In that there's four people on the show. There's Sarah, Tim, myself, and Scotty. Scotty is married with kids. The other three of us have no interest in kids. And so, which I know puts us at odds with, or certainly different than, the majority of Americans. And with every passing year, there just are more people in my social circle, all of our social circles, that just their lives either, I don't say they slow down, but they certainly drastically change. And they have a whole different set of priorities. And, I guess every generation goes through this. I'm clearly not the first guy to, all my friends are married with kids and they don't want to do anything, and, you know, whatever. But it's just, you know, it is a strange texturing of the American life, certainly.
Right, yes. Well, because one of my best girlfriends in the world is, I think, 7 years younger than I am. And up until this point, I mean, she and I have been parallel, like we're on the exact same page. And I think we're still really pretty good. But the getting married thing is definitely a little blip, because now I'm in this kind of like couple that gets invited to couple things. And so she, being a single woman, gives me a hard time about it. And I actually don't get invited to couple things, but she just thinks I am. And so even that, and I tell her, it's like, Megan, this is nothing. Like, if I start having babies, that's when it's going to get crazy.
Right, right. So, you know, whatever. I mean, and there are people who are coming to the world knowing that they want to be parents. It's like Mary Kay Place says in The Big Chill. She says, you know, the only thing I've known in my whole life is that I wanted to be a mother. And you know what? For me, it's exactly the opposite. That I just sort of figured out at like the age of, you know, 4 weeks or something. I think I'd already figured out I never wanted to have kids of my own. I think most people who shouldn't have kids don't ever realize it. Most people who don't have kids have 50 kids, or who, you know, who shouldn't have kids have 50 kids. It is sort of some sort of thing about, like, there is some sort of inverse ratio there about really the inability to be a good parent and, like, the fertility that your body is blessed with for some reason. So, all right, we got to stop, and we got to talk about some other stuff, because this is sort of consumed the entire program here, but Although I swear this is actually dovetails because you are talking about a kids thing today. You're talking about America's increasingly corpulent youth, and apparently the amount of time that they spend in front of the television with a big bag of Snackwells in their hand. So I guess what is so Congress is doing their like three times a month thing of doing something for the children or to keep children from smoking or getting fat or something.
Children are the future, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, actually, what this is, and this might seem to be every time a new group comes into Congress, every couple of years, we may now have this deal where Congress looks at how television and film are affecting our kids. And Congressman Ed Markey of Massachusetts, he's a Democrat, he chairs the subcommittee on telecommunications. He actually had a hearing this morning on this exact subject, very wide net here, talking about smoking, violence, sex, but really focusing on obesity and focusing on the ads that are targeting kids' programs with these fabulous cartoon characters that eat sugary, greasy food.
Sure.
And I tell you, he sent a pretty strong message saying, listen, you guys got to do more to voluntarily pull back or limit these ads or else I'm going to set new rules for you, which is a pretty amazing statement from a Democrat. But he feels strongly. This is the same man who helped author the beef chip legislation back in 1996. But he says, look, it's just gotten out of hand. We've got a serious problem with obesity. Jane Harman of California also rang in and said she's worried about censorship and that censorship is actually a bigger problem. So we really have Democrats tackling this debate, sort of tiptoeing here on very difficult, possibly dividing ground over protecting children, if you want to look at it that way, from advertising that will hurt them potentially, or is that censorship and is that a free speech?
Well, it's clearly censorship. I mean, that seems to be the dictionary definition
of censorship. Right now, the airwaves already have tons of regulation that you could call censorship as to. You know, we can't see, for instance, Skidamax, like you can't see certain things on at during daytime hours before 11 o'clock. A lot of that stuff shows after late at night. The rules are different during different times of days, for example. And that you could call censorship, but it's part of the way the TV environment has come along and the way the U.S. has regulated. And so what they're saying is, well, we may add more regulation for how we deal with kids. Advertising.
Censorship is one of those words that kind of, I won't say it sends me into a tizzy, A, because tizzy sounds like a silly word, and B, because it's a whole kind of semantic issue with me. I think people are afraid of that word censorship a little too much, and what I mean by that is...
I see what you're saying. That's a good point.
People are afraid to call certain things censorship when that word is, I guess, neither good nor bad. It just sort of is. And there is also this fictitious notion. Here's one of those facts, usually said by libertarians. One of those facts that everybody, quote, knows that is really completely untrue. People will say, well, you know, when a private business does something, that's not censorship. It's only censorship when the government does it. And they will. And this is usually something that they repeat mindlessly because they've never bothered to look it up. And, you know, if you look up almost any dictionary definition of censorship, like if you look it up in Webster's or almost any place, they will usually just say regulation of content by a group or an authority or a power or whatever. People censor things all the time. Individuals do, companies do, governments do, but... So I don't really know that it's such a bad idea, to have certain limits on certain things, legitimately harmful or destructive speech. But this idea that the government's going to be the national parent somehow has...
that's the issue.
If the Democrats aren't standing up and just telling actual, real, honest parents to keep junk food out of their kids' mouths, then really who is going to stand... I mean, are the Republicans going to stand up and say... Because the Republicans are the ones who want less regulation, right? Less government. And they want more power to the individual.
But it's tricky for Republicans because at the same time, the conservative wing of the Republican Party does want fewer, I guess, violent images, sexual images, and for some of them, want fewer unhealthy images when it comes to fast food in kids' TV. So Republicans who are generally against more regulation... In the last, let's say, 10, 15 years, it's not that clear cut. It's the same thing as when you're talking about spending. You know, Republicans used to be the party against, you know, Ronald Reagan was all small government, but really government has grown exorbitantly under Republicans, and that's not just because of the Iraq War. It's really misleading to say that that's the entire reason for that growth. But it's part of it, but it's not the whole thing. Republicans have added to spending beyond the Iraq War. So it's confusing what's going on with these parties right now. They sort of represent sometimes both corners of an issue.
Well, it's true. As somebody once said, Republicans, for example, who claim to be the party of smaller government, you know, they want it just small enough that it can fit inside your bedroom. And that's the problem with something like this. Is there... In all of this, has anybody ever, to your knowledge, because you're talking about this issue, has anybody ever sat down and shown something that absolutely definitively proves that, you know, like television makes kids fat? I mean, that television makes kids violent, that television makes kids anything?
The issue there is the causal relationship. You know, is a child more prone to be obese? Because, you know, is that child naturally going to be eating these same foods or naturally not going to be active and ends up in front of the television? Or is it the fact that television is so enticing with these snacks and so enticing with its entertainment that that child ends up having no activity and eating sugary snacks? I mean, it's a combination of a lot of factors.
I mean, has anybody
There's
ever...
There's definitely a relationship between the two. Kids who watch more TV are much more likely to be obese.
I guess I just don't understand, and it's foolish of me to expect you to have the answer, because it is one of those fabricated, I don't know, not fabricated, this is just one of those arguments that just has a life of its own and isn't ever going to go away. It just is a perpetual motion machine of discord. This idea that somehow your 9-year-old has access to your Amex and is going to be going to the local Sam's Club and buying a big bag of Twizzlers. I mean, seriously.
Right, and that's what one of the panelists said today in this hearing. Said, give me a break. The kids don't have jobs. They don't have money on their own. You know, maybe they might have little, you know, small, you know, lemonade stands, but by and large, kids are buying things with the money you give them, or more likely, they're eating what you buy.
Yeah.
And saying, listen, it's up to parents to really set a hard line. And the fact is that parents like junk food. You know, I mean, let's not get...
Americans like to eat badly, and they don't like to do much else. I mean, let's just be honest.
Junk food is delicious, you know, but, you know, it's an hour later that you feel disgusting, or you know, or maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe you feel delightful, but...
All right, well, let's end this on a positive tip. Your favorite junk food. What is your comfort food? Homemade foods do not count.
Wow, there's so many. I'll tell you what, I do love a good bowl of corn pops.
Corn pops are fantastic.
I could eat a whole box of corn pops.
Corn pops are they're an overlooked cereal, I feel, sometimes. You don't really hear a lot about those.
Oh, they're fantastic.
Weren't corn pops advertised with some large rooster-type mascot?
Are you sure that's not the... I remember the rooster. I'm associating with, like, cornflakes or something.
That's cornflakes.
Okay, but what was corn pops? Corn pops had some sort of mascot, some sort of cartoon mascot.
I don't know. I look around. Oh, you're...
All right. You know, the woman who...
How about you? Favorite junk food?
Favorite junk food. Well, probably cereal as well. I would say that I love me some Captain Crunch. You know, if we're talking about a junk food, in other words, not a meal, like a pizza, you know, probably doesn't count here. But if we're talking about something that is not typically considered a meal or a primary meal, you know, here's the thing that I'm a sucker for. And they masquerade it as a health food. If you go to the cereal aisle, there'll be that big box of so-called granola. And it's like the big Quaker granola, but clearly it's like not healthy for you in any way because it's all made of just brown sugar and fat and like beef tallow, you know, or whatever. But it's just a huge box of big crumbly chunks of granola. Man, I can go through a box of that in an evening. You know, sit me in front of the television with like a, you know, like an Entourage marathon and a spoon, and that box will be gone. And that's it.
Exactly. That's my sister's favorite as well.
Fantastic.
And so apparently all I see here is gotta have my pops as the logo. I don't think that Corn Pops had a creature.
I thought that all... Maybe I'm thinking of the Sugar Smash
Kellogg's
Frog.
Kellogg's rooster.
Maybe. Nah, it's all very confusing. Now I don't even know what I remember correctly. I'm becoming old now. All these
That's
things
a
are...
Kellogg's rooster, yeah?
I suppose.
I don't know.
Maybe I got another. I think I'm thinking of the Sugar Smash Frog with the baseball cap.
Yeah, the Sugar Smash, yeah.
Damn, I'm old. All right.
What a great name for a cereal. Come on.
I love the Sugar Smash. I love the idea, though, a cereal... The first word of the cereal is sugar. I don't even know if they still sell that. I don't know if they still sell.
They got a new name.
Do they really? Have they changed the name?
It's Honey Smacks now.
Honey Smacks. It's
never. Yeah.
See, but
I don't know if Sarah knows about that, but that's my understanding. It's now Honey Smacks.
I love the idea that they had a product and they didn't even try to lie about it. What is this? They're Sugar Smacks. You know. consider the fact that it's. The name of an unbelievably fattening, tooth-decaying ingredient, followed by a slang term for heroin.
Right.
What are you having, Sugar Smack?
Right.
Doesn't Sugar Smack sound like some new designer drug that Lindsay Lohan would be caught doing in the Will Rogers bathroom?
All right. Doesn't Brand have a lot better than Brand Buds?
Yeah, Brand Buds. Brand Buds, which are those things that you would see, like, in your mom, your grandmother's cupboard. You never actually saw anybody eating
right.
them, though.
I don't think I've ever tasted them, but from a distance.
No, but I remember seeing them in my grandfather's cupboard. I don't know whether they were just there because the doctor once told him it was a good idea, and he took one mouthful and decided never to try them again, or...
They look so much like gerbil food.
They really do. Yeah. They absolutely look like gerbil food. This has been the best hour this program has ever had right here. All right. All right. Well, big plans for the weekend?
My first full weekend off in forever, so no, basically no. I think, this is hilarious. Jason, the fiancé, got tickets to the Rush concert, Canada's answer to 70s and 80s rock.
Nerd.
Tomorrow night. I am fascinated to go.
Now, have you ever seen... Yeah. Are you a Rush fan?
No.
Oh, my God. Why didn't you tell me this like an hour ago? Okay.
No, I'm not... I'm open. I'm open-minded to it. I've got no thoughts, really.
No,
I'm sort of a little fearful, fascinated.
Real briefly, because... So your fiancé is a Rush fan, by the way, which tells me so much about him. neither good nor bad. I'm just saying,
right.
The fact that somebody is a Rush fan does tell you many, many things about their personality. Are you familiar at all with their music?
Yes, through Jason, yes.
All right, so you've heard what he said. I will tell you this. A Rush concert is a collection of nerds like you have never seen in your life.
Fantastic. That's what I'm looking for.
No, and I mean nerds, geeks, full-on slide rule-having dorks. I mean, and I say that as a guy. I own some Rush. A lot of my friends are Rush fans. I'm saying full-on screaming nerd patrol.
And look for
this moment. Here's the greatest moment of any Rush concert.
Okay.
Look for this moment during the Rush concert when Neil Peart, who is an amazing drummer, not if he's like from Mars or something, when he drums and he will do specific drum fills, and I don't know where you're seeing this, what the capacity is at this venue.
Large.
But if it's like 10,000 people, you're going to look out and you will see 20,000 hands in the air simultaneously mimicking his drum roll or his drum fill. All at once. That happens at a Rush concert. It's like when Phil Collins plays In the Air Tonight, and everybody in the crowd puts their hands up and goes, doo-doo, 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 at the end. There will be moments at this Rush concert where everybody will air drum in perfect synchronicity with Neil Peart. You watch for it.
Wow. See, I don't know. I'm kind of excited because I feel like I almost have to dress down.
Well, wear something that says Monty Python on the front.
Okay.
All right. I'll tell you what, we will have speech with you soon. Enjoy your weekend. Enjoy the concert. We'll
talk
to you soon.
Have a great weekend, guys. Okay.
Thank you, Lisa. There you go. Lisa Goddard, ladies and gentlemen, from the Hill. That's a solid hour we just did there. Could we be more behind? Sarah, how far behind are we? 20 minutes? 40? Doesn't even matter at this point, does it?
Half an hour.
Yeah. All right. Hey, Tim, how you doing?
Couldn't be better.
Okay.
Why do you ask?
Oh, you know. Killing time.
For what reason? Oh, you're too much goes.
I had no graceful way to end this hour-long monologue we just did. 503-733-2970. Back after this, the Rick Emerson radio program. Tim Riley around the corner with the noon news hour. Later on, Scott Daly, Dennis Pitzenbacher, Top 5, Jim Roop, all that you say to. Here's the remote.
Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
We're done. It's 503-733. I won't talk about it anymore. It's 503-733-2970.
You're right with that assessment, though. That's spot on.
Absolutely true. It's 503-733-2970. All right. Hey, by the way, real quickly, I know I'm pushing myself a little bit farther behind anyway, I got to say this. So if you go to 970.am right now, 970.am, we're running a little contest for Bullet Boys tickets. They're playing Outlaws next Wednesday along with Brittany Fox. Brittany Fox! And Enough's Enough, who are kind of an overlooked band, and Pale Rider. I know not Pale Rider, but whatever. But Outlaws, next Wednesday, you can enter to win a pair of tickets. We'll contact you next. I think the contest ends like next Tuesday afternoon or whatever. But anyway, 970.am. Go there right now. Enter to win tickets. See Bullet Boys, Brittany Fox, and Enough's Enough at Outlaws. Plus, don't forget, huge announcement. We'll do it at the bottom of this hour. Huge announcement coming up right here. So we'll get to that. Ladies and gentlemen, it's that time for Tim Riley.
It's time for the
the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Sanders' apartment building gets set on fire this morning. Somehow,
is this the beginning to a joke?
It's kind of
two freaks and a fox set fire to an apartment.
Sanders' apartment building at 4420 Southeast Belmont. We're talking about Southeast.
It's on the address again?
4420 Southeast Belmont. That's right by movie Madness. I know exactly where that is.
So residents try to put out the fire by filling pots and pans with water. One woman dumped water on the fire, then turned to leave and couldn't see the bedroom door because of all the smoke she created. You think they would call the fire department and leave?
No, of course not. Why would you do it?
Especially an apartment. You don't own it. What do you care? But, you know, I'd like to have tenants like this, even in my building.
And there's... Okay, and let me just say this. And I know where that is. Yeah. There's a fire department like three blocks away.
Mm-hmm.
That's at 4400 Southeast Belmont.
Yeah.
Okay, there is a fire department at, I believe, 3700.
So where they're
down the street.
Where they have pots and pans hanging in the hallway saying, in case of fire, fill these with water?
Seriously. And I mean, so was this in one of the apartments or was this like an external fire? Does it say?
At the apartment building.
Was it a fire started under suspicious circumstances?
Southeast Portland building and displaced several residents. It's a 2-alarm fire, so it's fairly big. But they should have left the building. Two residents were treated for minor smoke inhalation. They said smoke detectors alerted them that there was a fire. They concluded the fire started in a back bedroom, but they haven't determined the exact cause.
Well, I mean, I guess it's good to have pride in your dwelling or whatever. And
you bet. I wish I had
to stay there to try to put it. I wouldn't, you know. Boy, let me just tell you, I used to live in this fire trap of an apartment years ago. I mean, and...
I find that hard to believe.
I know. This fire trap of an apartment was just terrible. It was so unbelievably unsafe and illegally so. They didn't... Because I think if you have an apartment building, aren't you legally required to provide smoke detectors?
Yes, you must.
Yeah. Well, this guy didn't. He didn't... Well,
that's a bad thing.
Yeah, he didn't have smoke detectors in the apartment where I live. He had heat detectors. And a heat detector is sort of a cheap knockoff. It's like a forerunner.
It's after the smoke comes.
Exactly. It's a forerunner of the smoke detector. They made them in the 60s, I believe, is when they were used. And basically, there's a little thing inside that melts when it gets hot enough, and then it spills mercury, and it closes the circuitry. Anyway, the deal is, if it gets over like 190 degrees in the room, it'll set off an alarm somewhere. But, of course, by then, you are so dead from smoke inhalation. So, anyway. Well, so were they able to save the building?
Well... Yes, they were.
All right.
But it has significant damage.
Okay.
A driver fell asleep at the wheel and crashed into a tanning salon on TV Highway to Lowell this morning. A crash caused some delays for commuters. This was TV Highway near Southwest 182nd. The 24-year-old driver in an SUV has been ticketed for careless driving. Performance Tan Building was empty at the time because nobody's getting a tan at 6:30 in the morning, even in the burbs. Say, remember anthrax? It was all the rage a couple of years ago. Everybody had anthrax. Or sent to them.
Okay. See, for a minute, I had to wait to see if you were talking about the band or the thing.
Anthrax.
Have you ever seen the anthrax? Of course you haven't. Tim, have you ever seen the anthrax behind the music? No. Never mind. What's great is, if you watch the behind the music on the band Anthrax...
I was watching Behind the Music last night, but Anthrax wasn't being offered.
I didn't even know that show was still on. Is it on like VH1 5 or something?
No, it was on regular VH1 last night.
Really?
And it had Nick Lachey followed by George Michael.
Interesting. All right, I love that show. Yeah. I really do, and I know it's like from a different decade almost. Well, I guess it is from a different decade, but anyway, it's a great show. If you watch the Anthrax, the band Behind the Music, literally they spend like probably 18, 19 minutes, like a full third of the show. Talking about how the band's career was ruined by the anthrax. Of course, the band's career had already gone downhill before that. But with Scott Ian blaming the band's musical fortunes on, like, the spread of the anthrax disease.
Yeah.
All right. They was popular, though.
So a Birmingham woman, I guess this is Birmingham, Alabama, for all I know, faces federal charges involving an anthrax host here in Oregon. Sandra Collins is accused of mailing a letter in November 2005 to a Multnomah County tax office that threatened its contents relates with anthrax. Collins is charged under a federal law designed to help prevent false reports about public emergencies. She appeared in court yesterday and pled not guilty. She could face 5 years in the Hoosgow and $250,000 in a fine. Speaking of people in jail, we have a huge Paris Hilton.
Fantastic.
But not yet.
Oh.
But not yet.
Okay.
A SEAL beach man has been arrested for attacking another man with a baseball bat.
It happened in the town of Tidewater. They found 38-year-old Edward Ireland unconscious with severe head injuries. They flew him into Portland to see if they can do anything for him. Oh, this is too bad. An Oregon man is suing the FBI because they hit his Lamborghini with one of their planes. The propeller of the Cessna airplane mangled the driver's side of the black Lamborghini that the owner had given himself as a 60th birthday present.
Well, didn't he have... I mean, didn't he have insurance? Well, I guess his rates would go up if your car's hit by an airplane.
Well, it's a Lamborghini.
But I mean...
He's seeking $105,500 in damage.
I'm surprised. It's not, it's not more than that. But I mean...
Apparently, the FBI was flying out of this little airport in Aurora. Have you ever been there?
No.
It barely qualifies to be an airport. You really can't tell where it begins or ends or where you're supposed to drive or not.
It's a field with a patch of dirt.
As a matter of fact, I have been there before because that's where I took off in the balloon. That's where all the balloons take off.
Oh, right, okay. So, why was his Lamborghini in the middle of Aurora?
Well, it was in the area of the landing area, the airport. And apparently, the runway... Well, it's grass, basically.
Well, on that shiny black thing.
The airport is mowed grass. So the plane... The pilot of the plane heard this loud scratching noise, and he looks over the side and sees a small black sports car underneath the propeller, moving to the left, gushing fluid.
I mean, let me just say this. At the beginning of the program today, we played a little Bruce Campbell speech from Army of Darkness, and then found out, by miraculous coincidence, today is his birthday. And I was like, well, the odds of that are 103.65. What are the odds you're in an airplane and you're landing on planet Earth and you land on top of a black Lamborghini? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, what are the odds of doing that kind of damage? That is almost impressive.
And it was the FBI.
Jesus. And so they just... But, I mean, you would think that if you had a Lamborghini, you would have insurance.
Yes.
And that the insurance would not hold it against you. That is what I believe is called an unforeseeable act of God, right?
If God's the pilot.
I mean, they can't... Your insurance company couldn't raise your rates for that, could they?
I don't know. I'm not a Lamborghini owner.
All right. That's hard to believe. So he's suing the FBI because they won't pay?
Apparently so.
All right, this chair isn't fixed, by the way. I keep sinking in this chair.
Well, we'll have to call someone about that.
All right. Okay.
Just send the team the other stool.
Wait. Oh, I'm slowly sinking. Okay.
Oh, this poor kid who was sleeping in the tent in Canby in Clackamas County. Apparently, a big branch from a tree snapped off and landed on his tent, pinning the boy beneath it. It weighed several hundred pounds, this tree did.
Camping can be dangerous.
And he was lifelike. He's not in very good shape. Six flags and no legs. A maiming in Kentucky is our next story.
Thank you.
Six flags and another company shut down. Eight more thrill rides today around the country. After a teenage girl had her feet chopped off the ankle on the Superman Tower of Power, state inspectors returned to Six Flags, Kentucky. What kind of a place could that possibly be? Six Flags out of Kentucky?
No, and the Six Flags,
Kentucky Kingdom.
Two flags. That's the other thing, is it's called, it's Six Flags, Kentucky Kingdom. Kentucky Kingdom.
Kingdom of the White Veil. When the accident happened, to examine the ride, which lifts passengers 177 feet up and drops them nearly the same distance at speeds reaching 54 miles an hour.
So it's basically, it's like a free-fall type ride.
Right.
Yeah.
It is unclear at what point during the ride that the 13-year-old was injured, said the Six Flags spokeswoman.
I do believe it's when the ride hit the ground. Let's see, you have the whole story in front of you?
Mm-hmm.
That's great. There's so many great quotes in here.
Six Flags was shut down. They also shut down rides at parks in, St. Louis, Gurnee, Illinois.
Gurnee.
Six Flags Gurnee. They better keep that gurney handy. They're going to need it. And also, one near Washington is a safety precaution.
Oh.
Six Flags Over Texas near Dallas also has a Superman Tower of Power. It is not the same ride.
Now, listen to this. I've got another version of this story here. Let's see.
Millions of people have ridden this safely in our parks.
That's really, there's a small number of people who've lost their feet. Really, it's infinitesimal. Listen to this. Dispatcher said they were notified of the accident around 5 p.m. Thursday. Officials said the teen's feet were detached. above the, like she's a mannequin, like she's some sort of a Lego figure. We're detached
the foot back
above the ankle. According to Kentucky Kingdom's website, let's go there right now. I wonder if it says anything about it.
Six Flags Kentucky Kingdom.
Kentucky. To my old Kentucky Kingdom.
Is it Six Flags Kentucky Kingdom?
I don't really know. Kentucky Kingdom website.
Six Flags Kentucky Kingdom.
Here we go. Experience. Let's see. Website seems to be rather busy today. Lots of people booking exciting rides.
Fun Planner has zero items. Right at the top, this is Fun Planner. Zero items.
There's no fun of any kind in the Kentucky Kingdom today.
For just $64.99, a season pass pays for itself in two visits. Everyone loves the parade.
That's only $37 a foot. Oh, that's so great. I mean, you know, for us. Okay, let's see here. Zero fun items. Okay, but listen to this now. Her feet were apparently detached above the number of people who sent me the story, by the way. It's just incredible. Detached above the ankles. According to Kentucky Kingdom's website, let's see, it drops at 54 miles an hour. Said Chris Williams, who witnessed the event, quote, "We seen the cable break loose soon as it got to the top on the right-hand side. The people on the ride just came and hit the ground," end quote. Let's see.
The Superman ride has been removed from the thrill ride section.
No, it's more of a thrill ride now more than ever. It is a thrill ride, I would say.
She only rides with a thrill rating of max, mild, and moderate. But with this quote,
let's go to max. This is extreme. All right. Okay, I got more quotes, though. These are from witnesses. This is from Amber Williams, I think her name is. "When I got up there, the lady, she was just sitting there, and she didn't have no legs," Smith said. "She didn't have no legs at all. No legs." So let me understand this about her legs.
So there weren't any legs.
"My son's over there tripping out, man. You want to come back to a park and feel safe. We've got season passes, but we ain't coming back for sure."
You may know us for our adrenaline-pumping thrill rides.
Yeah, our blood-pumping thrill
rides. Crazy rides like our stand-up coaster. Well,
no,
that's not for everyone.
She's not going to be standing up on that, I'm afraid. It's sort of a slumped-over coaster. Coaster.
Oh, okay. Tell a big fun for our littlest riders.
Oh, God. Let's see. "Nothing provides more lasting memories than an amusement park visit." That's that true. Really is true. No, I think that can safely be said to be accurate. Oh, God. All right. Well, there you go.
Well, they still have the Twisted Twins ride. Grease of Lightning. Right there. Chain.
I got to tell you, you know, here's the thing about, let's see, max. "Better warm up your vocal cords." I hate it when people misspell vocal cords. Vocal cords doesn't have an H in it. Because you're going to scream. Apparently, according to this article, she didn't scream at all, by the way. Let's see, where did I have? According to this article, she was entirely, get this, she was silent after her feet were detached.
Ugh.
And there was no blood. How weird is that?
What?
That's what I'm just saying. Let me read it again. Let's see. Let me get back to this.
I'm in the news section. Find out what's happening at the park. Let's see. Splashwater Kingdom is bigger, better, and wetter.
Yes, it is. Let's
see. Tips for family fun.
Try. Let's see. Wear steel-ankled boots. Okay, now let's see. This guy says, "The lady was sitting there. She didn't have no legs. She didn't have no legs. At all, no legs. She was just calm." Let's see, there's some quote where he says that there was no blood though. Smith said she saw no blood and the girl wasn't crying, but the same couldn't be said for those riding the ride with her, apparently. Oh God. They don't screw around on rides these days. I mean, even the ones that don't cut off your legs, rides are scary now. The last time we were in California, Laura and I went to Magic Mountain. And I turned into a huge pussy at some point. I don't know when this happened.
The people who go to that Magic Mountain are scarier than the ride.
No, it's true. It was a whole lot of bad. I don't know when this happened. But at some point, I became just a colossal pussy when it turns, when it comes to, because when I was a kid, man, I got on roller coasters, and the scarier, the better, and something that, like, flings you into the sun, and, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. I would go on anything. The scarier, the faster I would get on it. Laura and I went to Magic Mountain, and this is how much of a pussy I was. Not only did I, after, like, yeah, because they paid, like, $190 or whatever to get in there. It's just some huge amount. I went on, like, 3 roller coasters. I'm like, that's it. I'm done. I am finished. I can't go on another one of these. And, of course, she's like, that's, well, screw you. I'm going to keep going. And so she went on roller coasters, like, all day. The process was, we would walk around the park. We would go to a roller coaster. She would get in line, we would talk, and then she would go on it, and then she'd come back down, and we'd go off and get something. And meanwhile, I would get, like, a corn dog or something. I went on, like, 3, and that was it. I was done. I couldn't go on another one. It just rattled me to the core. She went on this one. I forget what it's called, but it was called, like, the Terrible Twister, something, you know, one of those names. It was insane. I mean, it was the most unreal thing. First of all, it's one of those roller coasters where you're not sitting in a... you're not sitting in, like, a car. It's just a harness that goes around your upper body.
I do not like those.
It's like you're wearing a vest.
Like the things that you click down?
Yeah, yeah. It clicks over you, but your feet are swinging free. There's nothing underneath you. You go, get
wrong.
This. Okay, I'm just going to describe it. I didn't go on it. She did, and just going, watching her go on it made me want to cry like a girl. the thing just comes down, snaps over the top of you like a vest. Your feet are dangling free. There's nothing underneath you. Right there in chopping distance. Your feet are dangling free. And then there's this huge, you know, and of course you go up that toll, that tick, 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 as you're going up the incline before you start. But here's the thing. You go up backward. You know what I mean? In other words, so you are standing, basically. Standing but leaning slightly back. So you're leaning like you're leaning back against a wall a little bit. And that's how you go up. You go up leaning backward. And then when you hit the top and you plunge down the other side, the thing is like spin around like a pinwheel. So you're going down this freaking hill at like 1,000 miles an hour backward with your feet spinning free in a chair that's spinning you around out in the open goddamn air. I mean, just watching it, it makes me sick even to think about it. I mean, just remembering what that thing looked like. I don't remember what it was called, but man, boy, it was just terrifying. It's funny, these rides aren't clickable. I'm at the website right now, and I'm at the Six Flags Kentucky Kingdom website, where you can click on the thrill ride section. I'm clicking on the description of the rides, and none of the links are working right now. Okay.
Well, the other thing is, there are no sound bites available from people who were there.
No, there are. No,
somebody's been offered...
hush money? Well, let's see. Let's see. Poll, are amusement park rides safe? All right, here's Tim Riley.
I don't see anything here.
Wait, let me look. Is my computer up here? Let's see if I can. See if this video wants to play. They purport that there's some sort of a video here.
Now get a hint of Mother Nature.
Well, it's good to see their ads are working correctly. Really, why would you be
advertising? The power of Crest.
Like anybody in Kentucky is really worried about toothpaste.
New Crest Nature's Expression. Choose between.
Muting that. Is Crest the toothpaste that, like, they had that horrible Chinese knockoff where it's just filled with ground nails or something?
No, that was a different product.
All right.
New Nature's Expression. It's Crest. Uh-huh. The natural twist.
Okay. This is WOKY News Channel 32.
Maybe they'll have an interview.
Your complete news coverage for Greater Louisville starts right now.
Hey, she was just sitting there, and she didn't have no legs. She didn't have no legs at all.
Okay.
None at all.
At all. Really, when you say someone had no legs, that's kind of the end of it.
Yeah, you really...
At all. Sort of seems like you're over-explaining. There's no video. Not that I want to see the girls, like, you know, legs. I'm saying I want to see the ride, though. That's my thing. I want to see what the ride looks like. And there's no video.
I ain't got
no video at all.
No teenagers had any of those photographing phones there?
No, apparently not.
Hmm.
The, Yeah, the you can get the audio here, but there's no video for this story. I want to see what the ride looks like. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello. I know there's been like a million calls. Scotty's mad at me because we took, like, there's a million people who were on hold and we just got busy. Some guy calling from North Dakota.
He'll go.
We didn't get to. Well, time will heal those wounds. Hello, sir.
Hi. Hey, you know, Fabio, he got hit in the face by a goose on one of those rides.
Now, is that the ride that he was on when he got hit in the face with the bird?
Yeah, the one with the harness. I think that's the one. I mean, completely, like, broke his nose and everything.
Oh, yeah, that's a great photo. That's a once-in-a-lifetime photo, Fabio being hit in the face by a goose.
Yeah, it was God's way of, you know, getting him back for being so beautiful.
No, he's not beautiful anymore.
No, not anymore.
All right, thank you, sir.
All right,
there you go. That's Nick. Excellent. All right. Well, I can't, I can't find anything here.
Well, I think it's time to give up and move on.
Yeah.
I think I found something.
All right.
Well, you ain't got no legs, you teeny dang.
Oh, that's a terrible thing. That's a terrible thing to do. At all. Okay. Here's Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, on to other pursuits.
Okay.
A spurned woman ripped off her ex-boyfriend's testicle with her bare hands and attempted to swallow it. Amanda Monty was jailed for 2.5 years at Liverpool Crown Court after admitting to wounding Jeffrey Jones. Apparently, she flew into a rage after a party when Mr. Jones rejected her advances, so she grabbed his genitals, pulled up his left testicle.
Where's the logic in that? Now he can never please her.
She choked on the organ and spat it out. A friend handed it back to Mr. Jones, saying, "That's yours."
Now, here's the thing about this story, is that is actually...
Is that one of the worst stories ever?
That is
from the Mirror.
That is actually... Oh. Okay, well, I was going to get to this later, but that is actually the story that beat the man impaled on a plunger in his bathtub story and became the new champion. But there are now allegations that story is fabricated. So there's a little bit of scandal rocking the second worst story in the history of the world contest. So... The woman biting and then ingesting and then regesting, or whatever it is, ungesting, the testicle. It's unclear whether it really happened, although really, I don't understand. That does seem very detailed. I don't really understand how a fabricated story of that nature would, even in the Mirror, I mean, even in a British newspaper, I don't know how that would happen. So we're looking into it. All right, but that is...
We'll get back to you on it.
We're going to talk about it later on today, actually, because that did unseat the plunging story.
A truck driver who was steering with his knees while eating spaghetti from a saucepan has been jailed for dangerous driving. Martin Beans heated up his meal while his vehicle was being loaded with chicken carcasses.
You had me at saucepan.
He was using his left hand to hold the saucepan, and his right hand had a fork.
Steering at his knees.
Apparently, this man is a Dutchman. He'd been driving trucks for 12 years, spending the past 6 as an employee of a British trucking firm. He was jailed for 2 months. It was a very, very serious offense on a very busy road. Your erratic driving was far below the standard expected and required of a man driving such a vehicle. It was a serious risk to road users. He's also banned from driving for a year and must take an extended test before driving a heavy load again.
I love anything that has anybody eating food out of a saucepan. That's the hallmark of a great story right there. All right, somebody's accusing me of making up this business.
We don't make things up.
Well, not that we'll admit. Somebody's accused me, though, of fabricating the story about the Kurt Cobain. It's not an action figure. That's the wrong way to put it. What a collectible figurine.
I do have that.
It's true. It's true. There is. You can buy it now. It's a Kurt Cobain. I don't think it's from McFarlane, but it's just like my Kiss dolls. It's like, or the Alice Cooper doll. It's a Kurt Cobain, like, posable or whatever, you know, the displayable collectible figure.
And the reason is, Kurt Cobain's image will soon be in a variety of different places, including lunchboxes, keychains, and action figures. The marketing bliss of the late Nirvana frontman comes courtesy of Courtney Love.
Of course.
And a recent decision to sign a licensing agreement with National Entertainment Collectibles Association. Variety is now officially named Cobain, a 2007 hot property. When Love's deal was announced, her manager, Peter Asher, told Forbes magazine, the goal was to agree to the right things, which would generate income and enhance the Nirvana catalog.
Really? I mean, I don't even know how to feel about that. I guess it doesn't really matter to me. I don't really care.
No.
I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't affect me at all. I guess I don't really care all that much. It shouldn't really surprise me.
I mean, that's the whole thing. The moral that we have learned from the entertainment industry, period, is that everyone eventually sells out, regardless of what their initial motives are, their claims, regardless of what they tell Spin magazine or Pitchfork reviews when they're being interviewed. Everyone eventually sells out for the highest possible dollar. And Courtney Love, of course, she's just doing what we all knew she eventually would anyway. So, because she sold off like half the catalog already, right? She didn't even own a majority in his publishing anymore. I think most of his songs. I mean, I will say this. I think we all know or suspect that Kurt Cobain might be more than a little horrified by the idea that there's going to be a Nirvana lunchbox. I mean, I know that. I wonder how Dave Grohl and those guys feel about that. I wonder if they even get a say in it. I don't even know how that estate works anymore. I don't even know who owns what there. But, well, whatever. All right, here's Tim Riley.
A spurned lover got revenge on her partner by putting itching powder in his underpants. Brenda found David having sex at work with his colleague, Anne. Over the three-year period, she also sent hate mail and damaged his 45-year-old mother's car. Things weren't going so well between us. I came home one day and found the pair of them in a compromising position. After that, I went away for the weekend. When I came back, he had moved in with her and my bags were packed. They were married and then he left her. And she saw the itching putter as a way to make him suffer. His behavior was as bad as mine, and I accept that mine was a criminal.
I didn't think itching powder really existed. I thought that was one of those fake things that only...
Oh, you buy it at a magic shop.
Okay, but what is it? What is itching powder?
I don't know.
I mean, what is it? What is it made of?
Itchy stuff.
Scabies. Where's my scabie powder? Where's my essence of shingle? That's one of those things. You know what it is? It's like sneezing powder. Do you ever order anything out of the back of a comic book? You know, when they had that little, the toy and joke novelty shop or whatever in comic books where you could, like, send away. Not the thing where you had to sell, like, greeting cards or some crap, but where you could just send, like, a dollar and you would get, like sea monkeys or something. Did you ever order any of that the stuff?
I can't remember if I did or not.
Because they would always sell. There was always the same stuff. There was, like, the Joy Buzzer. Mm-hmm. There was the X-ray specs.
The whoopee cushion.
I never did. I was always curious as to the X-ray specs. I always wondered.
I think everyone's curious about that.
But I mean, really, what do they do?
I've never ordered them.
Scotty, you ordered a 7-foot Frankenstein. Was it like inflatable? No, it was the thing that hung in the back of your door. Was it the Frankenstein that hung in the back of your door? Because if so, yeah, it was like a plastic thing. Yeah, you thought it was a mannequin. Yeah, it wasn't false advertising, but they always made the thing seem a little cooler than they really were. But yeah, it hung in the door. Yeah, I saw that. He's still angry. False advertising. Yeah. I ordered the 10-in-1 scope. There was a thing they sold. It was like a 10-in-1 scope. It was like a magnifying glass and like a mirror and like a microscope and like a compass and a something else and like some binoculars. And it really was just like a plastic magnifying glass with like folded in a bunch of different ways. It was like $1.50. I remember being so excited waiting for that thing to come in the mail. I don't know if kids still do that. I don't know if kids still buy crap out of the back of the comic books. And then, of course, everybody remembers their first experience with sea monkeys when... Yeah, like you think it's going to be like, you think they have the whole underwater house and like a sea monkey car and like a sea monkey school that they go to and they have a crown and it's really just brine shrimp. But you know, what are you going to do? We have to get some sea monkeys for the studio. That's what we ought to do here because we don't have that piranha tank anymore. We got to get some sea monkeys. All right. Kentucky joke. Unsafe driving story. More Hitler stuff. Yeah, well, we'll see. All right. We got to take a break here. We come back. Huge announcement about that. We will do that. It'll be the first item of business we get back. From around the corner, we have a big announcement about something that's going to be happening. The station's going to be involved in, and then more of Tim Riley in the new News Hour. Later on, James Roop, Scott Daly, Dennis Pitzenbarger, and so forth. You say there's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. The Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Scotty insists that this guy has a fantastic Kentucky joke. All right, we'll do that. Then we'll do this big announcement. Then we'll continue the news. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson show. What is your amazing Kentucky joke, sir?
Okay. How do you know that the toothbrush was invented in Kentucky?
I don't know. Why?
Does anyone in the room know?
Not that anybody cares.
No.
No.
Because if it was invented anywhere else, it would be called a teeth brush.
Okay. God bless you. That was really funny, actually. God damn, I'm just a sucker for stupid jokes if I don't see the punchline coming. You know what I mean? All right. That's 503-733-2970. All right, before we do anything else, we will continue with the news hour here in a second. Let us now pause.
Wait, we need to adequately prepare. You didn't...
All right.
What is going on?
No, then we'll prepare while I read this.
Okay.
Rick, you just know Six Flags is now going to have to buy that girl some new legs. I can just picture the girl screaming, I don't want your legs. And then she says, or he, whoever this person is, just had to throw up my Varsity Blues version of the incident. Thanks, best show ever. Signed. And then it's some name I can't... It was a gender-neutral name that I can't pronounce. All right. So here's the deal. Now, you remember last year, a little under a month ago, we did the Horns Across the Hawthorne. Last year was 6606, June 6th of 2006, AM 970, at the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We conducted Horns Across the Hawthorne, a huge photo of which actually stands in our studio right now, because you can do, you know, leave a lot of those photos online. It's a big event, huge thing, fun for the kids. So this year we are coming up on 7707. July 7th of, and see, the great thing is we'll be able to milk this all the way for the next 5 years, all the way through 12/12/12. But last year was 6606. Coming up in just today, I don't know, 3 weeks, something like that, 2 weeks, we have 7707, and there's going to be a huge event happening. There's going to be a whole lot. We're going to be adding to this. We're going to be talking more about it. We're going to be unveiling other things, other facets, other aspects, other brushstrokes on the masterpiece that is 7707. But the big news, the headlining news, one might say, is that on 7707, AM 970 Solid State Radio is proud to present live in concert.
Are you really doing that?
Thank you. Thanks so much. I hadn't even really planned that. Thank you so much. AM 970 Solid State Radio proudly presenting. It's so hard to talk seriously when you're playing this.
Well, you can't talk seriously, but it's ridiculous.
We are proud to present Vanilla Ice in concert at Outlaws Rock Music Hall, coming up on July 7th, 2007. AM 970 Solid State Radio presents An Evening with Vanilla Ice.
Oh my God!
We're the only station that really rocks.
Yes. I will say this. Now, here's the great thing about this.
He wouldn't play for anybody else.
No, I gotta tell you. Here's the good. You can hear it in our voices. We're legitimately giddy about it. It's pretty damn cool is what
it
is.
We don't believe it ourselves.
No. I called my mom when you told me, and she was freaking out.
No way.
She's like, I know how much you loved him.
Well, here's the thing, and we hadn't confirmed it yet. It was just a thing that we had sort of, we were working on it, putting it together, getting everything finalized and so forth. And so we're in the studio the other day, and Sarah says, did you know the Vanilla Ice is coming to town? And I said, yes, I did. And she's, I'm so excited, I'm going to buy a ticket. And I actually said, well, you may not want to do that quite yet, because it wasn't finalized. It was something we were working on confirming. And then I told her, we won't be able to announce it until Friday. But I said, AM 970, where the station is, we are presenting the Vanilla Ice show at Outlaws. And Sarah immediately, I mean, it was like, I could see immediately in your head the list of people, of phone numbers you had to call, people you had to tell about it. And so I know Sarah immediately grabbed the phone and called like your mom or your sister or somebody. And you were like,
I called my sister and then my mom.
So,
oh my God, I'm so excited. Plus, we'll have a lot of cross to talk about, because we've interviewed Ron Jeremy and they lived in the house together.
Oh yeah, right. It's surreal life.
And hopefully, you know, I'm hoping is that Tammy Faye Baker doesn't die. You know, that's probably what's going
to
happen.
Or does, and then we'll be able to see if we can make him cry.
No.
Will the Iceman melt? So as we get closer to it,
I'm
going to
bring in a copy of Cool as Ice and ask him if he can sign it. And I'm going to ask if he can record my voicemail message that says, why don't you drop that zero and get with the hero?
Yes. Will you? Oh, that's so great. Will you sign my copy of Vanilla Ice Live? It's a cool thing. We're here talking about it right now, which is the thing that we've been working on it for about the last week, trying to get it confirmed. So that is coming up Saturday, July 7th, 2007, 7707 this year. It happens at Outlaws. And of course, the big announcement today is that AM 970 presenting Vanilla Ice Live. We're going to have more announcements about that. There's going to be a whole bunch of stuff happening that night. That is the big event, but there's going to be a whole bunch of smaller stuff happening that same day, that same evening, that we'll be talking about as
time goes on. So anyway, so that is the announcement. We'll be talking a lot about it as the weeks go on. So 7707 AM 970 Solid State Radio presents live at Outlaws Rock Hall. Vanilla Ice live in concert. So you stay listening for more details on that. It's all very exciting.
He's playing in Romania tonight.
Is he really?
Oh.
He's in Romania.
So great.
I'm so excited.
No, it's going to be cool.
You saw me bounce up and down and yell when you told me.
It's an unironic excitement. It really is. It is an unironic joy.
So. Right in the middle of the summer of love.
What better way to celebrate the summer of love? All right.
It's just the most random thing ever.
It's great.
It's completely fantastic. But I thought you were messing with me.
No, his people called our people.
No, that really is true.
How awesome is that?
It is fantastic. So Outlaws Music Hall, Portland's new house of rock presents. Because those guys have been doing a whole series of things. Because they had L.A. Guns. And then, of course, next week, it's Brittany Fox, Enough's Enough, and the Bullet Boys. And then AM 970 presents Vanilla Ice on 7707. So more details on that as we move forward, as they say.
Part of our summer concert series.
I don't want to reveal anything else. That's the thing. I don't want to reveal any other aspects of this. I want to wait a little bit at a time, and I don't want to put the cart before the horse and start saying things before everything else is sort of confirmed. So that's the big announcement, though, and we'll talk more about that. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
I don't know how to follow that up.
There really is no way to follow it up.
I guess I'll have to do this Paris Hilton thing.
All right.
ABC is claiming it was outbid by NBC for the Paris Hilton interview. According to the ABC reps, who asked not to be identified, ABC had agreed to pay $100,000 to the Hilton family in a deal for the interview. The deal would have included access to materials owned by the family, like photographs and videos of Miss Hilton.
$100,000 or a million?
$100,000.
I heard that ABC had offered $1 million.
That's what they're claiming here. Then Barbara Walters told ABC executives that Miss Hilton's father, Rick Hilton, after getting the ABC offer last Sunday, called back Wednesday to say that the interview could go to a competitor because $100,000 is not even the same galaxy that NBC had offered. Then we have Michael Strict, a crisis manager hired by the Hiltons. That's code for a paid liar. Issued a statement saying, contrary to media reports, Paris Hilton is not being paid for any television interview, nor is Paris Hilton being paid for any collateral material, including videos and photos. Now, you know this is a lie.
Well, no, it's totally a lie. And
people are paid to lie.
And because this is NBC that secured it or ABC?
NBC.
NBC. Mm-hmm. Because they're trying to retain some sort of shred of journalistic credibility by claiming that they're not paying for stories, because, of course, that is a déclassé project. That is a thing that they could, that tabloids do, like the Inquirer will do that. But NBC doesn't want to, they want to dirty their fingers or whatever, when clearly they're paying for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, so. All right.
And, the Hilton's crisis manager, paid liar, claims it's not going on.
Let's just call him what he is. Tim, he's a mouthpiece.
Most recently, NBC won the rights to an exclusive interview with Prince William and Prince Harry of Britain. The interview was part of a larger deal. NBC paid a reported $2 million for American rights to broadcast a concert for Diana. Little good that'll do. She's been dead for a decade.
A concert for Diana. What is it we're doing for her exactly?
I don't know.
Are we giving
casting off her grave?
I was going to say, are we giving her cyborg legs? Is this a concert to create like a zombie Diana?
Sending her car to Leif's for her.
Too soon.
No, it's been 10 years. That's not too soon.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, all these people are getting paid to lie anyway.
Well, my whole thing is this. Sarah asked me this question yesterday, and I didn't know the answer to it, amazingly enough. My deal is this. I don't really know how rich the Hilton family is. Are they billionaires?
I would imagine so, yeah.
That's what I thought, but I don't really know. I mean, it's that question of, how do they really have that much money? Or is it, do they... I mean, here's a dumb question. Do the Hiltons, Rick and... whatever, Buffy Hilton, do they own...
Kathy,
do they own Hilton Hotels? Or is this one of those deals where they use the name and they're like on the board of directors, but it's really owned by some other firm? I don't really even know that. We were talking about how much money Paris Hilton really has access to. Mm-hmm. And whether... I mean, obviously she's rich. But does Paris Hilton really have access to that much? I mean, is she really, in terms of the wealthy, is she really in the stratosphere? Or is it one of those things where it's just the illusion of being unbelievably wealthy, and really she's only just rich?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't even know why it matters.
Yeah, I thought that they were just kind of hiding behind their name. I didn't think they had a lot of money.
All we have is bad debts covered by a good name.
Now, apparently, Paris Hilton preferred Meredith Vieira to interview her.
Yeah. I, you know, as though it makes any difference. I mean,
NBC rules prohibit paying for interviews.
Uh-huh, sure. Well, but that's the thing, right?
It's like, you know, payola.
Well,
no, people can't do that.
No, of course not. That's, I'm an independent record representative, and I would like to... but that's how they're trying to get around it, right? Because they're not... As I understand it, why am I wasting my brain on this?
And she'll also get another $300,000 for her pokey picks.
I think she already got money for her pokey picks, Tim. Yeah. I think that they're getting around it by giving money to like a charity or something. That it's not going directly to Paris. Is that the deal? Here's what just happened. Tim, while trying to find information, just held up the one piece of paper he has in his hand and shook it near the microphone to make it look as though he was studiously digging for more information. He just picked the piece of paper up to the microphone and went, and then started reading it again. Like that was going to somehow shake new information out from between the lines.
We'll continue to dig for more information.
We'll
go back to the news center.
To shake this piece of paper, hoping that new news falls off of it onto the counter. All right. I've got many, many, many emails coming in about Vanilla Ice. They are all about the Ninja Turtles theme song. Rick.
He was in the second Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I totally forgot about
go
that.
Go Ninja.
I thought.
Go Ninja. Go. Rick, will Vanilla Ice sing? Will he sing Go Turtles? Is he doing his later hard rock stuff or his old school rap? I can't believe I wrote this question.
We haven't decided what he's singing yet.
He'll sing what we tell him to sing.
I'm afraid he's going to
be like a Playtone catalog.
Yeah. Aren't you afraid he's going to be grumpy and he won't want to talk about Vanilla Ice?
No, but he, you know, here's the thing.
Has he finally embraced it? Because when he was on The Thrill, like, he hadn't embraced it. He was all spray painting his face.
We'll beat it out of him. You sing Ice Ice Baby in Spanish. We make so many jokes about that movie, and I always wonder who gets them, and then I realize I don't care. Let's see. Vanilla is the talent. Lenny is the fool. Let's see. Rick, I remember you saying a few weeks back that Vanilla Ice saved all his money and is still rich. Is it true? Where did you hear it? You should ask him about it. It sounds interesting. Also, says this email, if you can get him to freestyle ninja rap on your show, I will love you forever, says this email from a man. What else do we have here? This email just says, go ninja, go ninja, go ninja, go. Well, here's the thing. I don't claim to be the world's foremost Vanilla Ice expert. We'll be learning much more about him as we move on towards 7707.
You mean Robert Van Winkle.
Robert Van Winkle, yes.
I wonder if you should call him Bobby.
Well, look, I can talk a lot about Vanilla Ice because Sarah, you remember it, but I lived it. I remember being a DJ when I was a top 40 jock when Ice Ice Baby came out. And goddamn, it was like the second coming of Jesus. I mean, people don't really remember, or maybe the people are trying to force themselves. They're trying to repress exactly how much this country went just crazy for that guy.
Okay, my friend Megan, who works at Outlaw, says that it's going to be a set of all of his old stuff.
Yeah.
Oh,
such nerds.
Yeah.
But, you know, but it's going to be a hard rock version, probably. Like, it'll be... Because, you know, I got to say that we used to use it as a bump, actually. We used to use the metal version of Ice Ice Baby on the show, which is actually not bad. It was actually really cool. I liked it quite a lot. I could interview, and I know that there's people... I'm going to say these comments. I'm going to give a blanket disclaimer now that I don't mean any of this as a goof. I mean, I'm serious about all this stuff. I could interview Vanilla Ice for, like, a week. I mean, he is such a huge part of American pop culture. There are so many things about that guy. Vanilla Ice, people may think I sound daft, he is a microcosm for so many things in American musical and cultural history. I mean, you think about, well, first of all, that he was in a very real way, you know, the Elvis of rap, at least at a certain point, because he was, you know, him and the Beastie Boy, you know, white guy crossed over with the black music form. He was, you know, there was a huge sampling controversy. He was one of the big sampling controversies from that time.
Pressure.
Totally, along with Bismarcky and his sampling and Vanilla Ice sampling Queen.
He won that lawsuit too, which just boggled my mind. I remember.
Did he?
Was like, I remember listening to him talk about it. He was like, no, Under Pressure was like,
different. Well, and he was an early uncredited investor, one might say, in Death Row Records. There's at least two different versions of a very notorious run-in that he had with Suge Knight, where he was allegedly dangled over a balcony by his ankles. I mean, he had, I believe, the first live rap recording was Vanilla Ice Live. I'm pretty sure he had the first ever live rap recording, which is, you know, not an art form that really ever took off. You don't see a lot of live rap records. But they tried a lot of things with that guy. He is probably the quintessence of the American public turning on somebody for no real reason. I mean, you know, the guy was, you know, he dressed kind of goofily and he gave himself a fictionalized past. But, I mean, so does everybody. I mean, so what? Freaking Bob Dylan claimed that he traveled the country as a carnival barker, for like 8 or 9 years, which was like completely fictitious. Jim Morrison claimed that he was an orphan, that his parents had been killed when he was like a year old. And, of course, his parents were alive and his dad was in the military. His parents were alive the whole time. And I know I know when you're trying to be the Lizard King, it doesn't really make it look all that cool to say that there's like a King Lizard mom and dad at home or whatever. But I mean, you know, whatever the guy, just everybody fictionalizes everything. There was no real reason for the American public to turn on Vanilla Ice the way they did. But that really is an eating our own kind of a thing that is, I think, unique to this culture. And the fact that I have seen several interviews with him. Where he claims straight-facedly that he is independently wealthy, that somebody invested, he had a guy invest his money for him from the beginning, and that he never has to work again. I read an interview with his accountant one time, and the accountant said, the quote was, and we got a break here, Vanilla Ice's accountant said, his bank account resembles that of a very, very fortunate lottery winner. And maybe that's BS and maybe it's not, but I mean, he didn't really seem to be hurting for money. And, you know, and he kind of tours and he does stuff, but he didn't really seem to be desperate about it. I mean, it does seem like he does seem like a pretty sharp guy. Although, I do remember him. Did you ever see him have that meltdown on MTV? Did you watch that?
I think no. I did a long time ago.
When he went nuts on that show with Jon Stewart and Janine Garofalo and Colin Quinn, when he went psycho, it's pretty amazing. I'd love to ask him about that, too. We'll talk about that. We'll talk more about Vanilla Ice when we return. Vanilla Ice live at Outlaws Music Hall 7707.
Go, go ninja, go ninja, go, go ninja, go ninja, go, 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 go.
More after this, kids.
It's a green machine, gonna rock the town without being seen. Have you ever seen a turtle get down? Slamming and jamming to the new swing sound. Yeah, everybody let's move. Vanilla is still with a new jack groove. Gonna rock and roll the place with the power of the ninja turtle face.
Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. And we have exciting Spice Girls news, too, coming up later on. It is very telling, by the way, that the Spice Girls photo they used is from 10 years ago. And it's been taken from like 1,000 yards away anyway, when Jerry Halliwell was already like 50. All right, we'll get these emails. We have exciting breaking news that we're going to get here in just one second. But to accompany us on this breaking news, ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. What am I doing? Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from Los Angeles. Flawless. Jim Roop. Hello, sir.
Smooth, baby, smooth.
It's what we do, my friend.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
We aim to please. How's life? How are things?
Great.
We have a little bit of breaking news. Hold on a second. Here's is Tim Riley with some breaking news for you, Jim.
Breaking news?
No, your microphone's on.
I can't tell. My on light is so burnt out.
All of his buttons are burnt out.
What did all the heck?
Gee willikers. All right, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
NBC Burbank is telling TMZ the network has just canceled its interview with Paris Hilton. The Burbank Bureau was planning for the interview with Paris and Meredith Vieira on Today, but a short time ago, the suits informed selected staff members the interview is dead. No reason is given. The story is developing.
I'll tell you the reason.
All right, please
do. They're catching a lot of hell for paying her $1 million or whatever the hell it is to do that.
Which is their paid liar of the Hilton family said that that's not happening.
Yeah, I know that's what they're saying.
Well, but as we were talking about earlier about how NBC was trying to pretend that they are above this practice regularly used by tabloids, which is...
Everybody pays for interviews. If you want an exclusive, you're going to have to pay for it today.
Do you think that happens at the major networks even if we don't hear about it right now?
I think there is compensation of some kind.
Is that the... I mean, I wonder...
I don't know that it's always a lot of money.
It might just be, something that's less tangible, maybe. We're not going to pay you for the interview, but we will
take... really use a weekend on Coronado.
I was going to say, it will take place in Barbados.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing, and Dennis Miller was making this point this morning, and I do think it's true, that I think the American public is still... It's not that she hasn't been punished, because clearly, and I was thinking about this today, you know what it is? I saw some picture of her from, a couple months ago. And she was, like, sitting at the front row of some awards ceremony and looking smug and whatever. And I was thinking, you know what? No matter what she does from here on out, no matter what Paris Hilton does, where she's photographed, how glamorous she looks, what red carpet she's walking on, I will warm my soul by the glowing ember of her crying in the back of a squad car forever. Like, that will, on my darkest, loneliest, coldest night, that will keep me company.
I don't know what it is about that chick, but man.
People hate her, man. And I can tell you, that day, when the day that Tim unwisely took vacation, the day that she got dragged screaming into the squad car, dragged screaming, crying to jail, it's like I'm not saying she's not going to go back to having a good, rich life because, she's rich and that's what happens and whatever. But you know what? That's something we'll always have that day. It's like when couples say we'll always have Paris, I will always have that Friday. But I think the American people just still feel like she's got to be given her pound of flesh. And I don't think the idea that she's going to be given, because the story I heard was that it was $1 million.
Yeah, that's what I heard too.
And then there's somebody now claiming, well, no, at most it was going to be $100,000, which means that the truth is maybe somewhere in between. But, NBC was, and this is not a good time for network news to be losing more of their credibility anyway, because...
Well, one of the big fallouts to that, once that was leaked, if you will, is that here's NBC, another major network that's making a lot of cost-saving cuts.
Sure.
And then they want to pay this woman however much. If they pay her $10, it's too much. They want to pay her some money to sit down and do a one-on-one with Meredith Vieira. I mean, come on. That's not going to be a real even conversation.
Seriously.
You know? And they want to pay her for that? So I would imagine they're catching a lot of hell from a lot of different angles on this. And so the suits probably said, look, let's just get out of this altogether. Who gives a crap, you know?
Which is just great. And you know that she'll end up being somewhere. That she'll get busted down to, whatever. She'll get, she'll be an E or something. You know, I mean, somebody will interview her.
Ryan Seacrest will do his interview again with her.
I do like the idea that it's, I do like the idea, though, that they asked for $1 million, obviously just thinking they would get it. And although this is another trend, though, that I was thinking about, because, we were talking about the O.J. book yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, I was thinking yesterday about this O.J. book and how it was going to be published by whatever, Regan Books or HarperCollins or whatever it was going to be. And then there was all this outcry and it got pulled. And, I mean, the more I think about the fact that O.J. Simpson book, his alleged confession, getting pulled off the market, I mean, the more I think that that is a thing that is almost without precedent. I mean, I cannot remember, issues of plagiarism or libel aside, I can't remember the last time in American life when a publisher pulled a book because the public didn't like the content.
I don't think that's ever happened.
I mean, that O.J. Simpson...
I really don't think it's ever happened.
That O.J. Simpson book, I think, is the only time I can ever remember a publisher removing a book from the marketplace because the public felt the contents were objectionable.
The closest thing that ever got to that was bookstores refusing to sell it or being pulled off of library shelves, but nothing where a publisher just
said, no, we're not doing this.
Yeah, even especially after they'd committed monies to it. I remember a lot of bookstores, there was a debate when I was in high school about, well, are we going to sell the Satanic Verses or not? The Rushdie book, because there was the fatwa on his head and whatever. But even then, it stayed on the market, and there were publishers who stepped up, and they're like, you know what, we'll take the risk, we'll publish it. So it's an interesting time. I'm not saying that, like, we're losing our journalistic standards or whatever, but it is... I don't even know if it's good or bad that they're becoming more responsive to the public taste in that, you know, the public bitches about the OJ thing, so they trash these 500,000 copies that already exist. The public screams about the Paris Hilton thing, and so this news organization says, well, we won't do it. I honestly don't know how to... Lately, I sound like it's some big philosophical old guy where I'm having all these deep thoughts about whatever, but I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it does seem like the news is... more reflexively reactive to American whim lately. I mean, maybe it's the case, maybe it's not. Maybe I'm just
making it up. I think it's always been that way, don't you?
I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know if 5 years ago or 10 years ago, if this Paris Hilton interview would have happened, regardless of how much the people screamed about it, and if they would have said, well, we're journalists and we're going to, you know, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, but at the same time, it is just Paris Hilton.
See, my college thesis was, does the news create the media or the media create the news? And I think in a lot of ways, the media creates the news. And I think in this instance, it's being created because of our interest. And I hate to use the word collectively involve me. But it is. I mean, it's our interest in it that has piqued the public's interest in it. And I don't know why we're doing that. We had a little go-around today when we found out that she was going to be released either Monday or Tuesday. And I said, you mean I got to camp out at the jail from Sunday at 10 p.m. until this idiot gets released? Oh, man, you would have think I would have shot the Pope the way I was fired back at.
Right.
So, It really is. It's not that I understand how big the story is to the American people, and I will probably be there, but I don't get it.
Right. Well, and it's just one of those things that there was like a silent vote, and we all agreed that we cared somehow. And again, I'm no better than anybody else. We said we had 4 hours on it the day
it
she went
fun.
To jail.
And also, hey, if that's the worst thing we got to talk about, then we must be doing okay, because there's no fires, no earthquakes, no floods, no nothing like that. If we can focus on Paris Hilton, great. However we make the meters bounce, it's beautiful. But still, I'm going... And I got to be able to say honestly, I hate this story.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just, and by the same token, I mean, there's us, and then, you know, I'm not, you know, our show isn't really the New York Times either. So,
better.
I mean, it's like the New York Times, it was like a front page story in the New York Times when she went to jail. So it is just, I don't know if it's good or bad. It's just a weird time. It is a really weird time.
Thank God.
I guess the Phil Spector thing seems kind of dull compared to this, but.
Well, there's no testimony today. There's no court on Fridays.
So I didn't even know. See, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. So there's not much to talk about today. Although the past 2 days, I think, have been pretty good at the Spector trial with Lynn Harrell, the chief criminologist, on the stand, pretty much bolstering the prosecution's case. A lot of it, the defense is going to be able to explain away. But Linda Kenny Biden yesterday, when she started her cross on Harrell, kind of screwed up and started antagonizing her right away. And the jury hates that kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, especially with that New York accent here in L.A. They just hate that.
And that's another thing. You know, I was thinking about this. That's another thing where I think that, like, juries are becoming a little bit more aggressive over the last few years. And I think the O.J. case might have been the tipping point.
Yeah, that was the turning point, man.
Do you remember when the O.J. jury, like, refused to come to work one day?
Oh, yeah.
I forget what they were even angry. They were demanding something. And they're like, we're not going to come to court until you do, like, till we get cable or something.
They wanted Otis Spunkmeyer. They didn't want Mrs. Fields anymore.
Yeah. I mean, something was like, really, the jury just, like, demanded something, and they said they weren't. And I remember people going, this is unprecedented that the jury is issuing this demand. And I remember during that Jackson case a couple years ago,
mm-hmm.
when they were interviewing the jurors after Jackson was acquitted, and there was that one juror who said that, like, the reason that she voted to acquit is because the accuser's mother... like, had pointed at the jury, and then she's like, and I was thinking, don't point your finger at me, lady.
Yeah, we love that lady. We called her Pinky because her hair changed all the time. You know, I like that jury. We'd sit there in the morning and watch that jury arrive every day, you know, and it was a very diverse jury, and they were very good. They were very accommodating. They were treated like crap, really.
Yeah,
you know? I mean, juries are, you know. They're almost held hostage. Yet this jury really did a hell of a job. They were so good to let them go home every day.
Yeah.
You know?
And the best part about it was not only was the story over at the verdict because there was no perp walk, no nothing. It just ended with the acquittal, with the acquittals, I should say. But the post interviews with the jury were very entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
And very good.
Oh, they didn't hold back.
No.
No barrels.
It was good. And, you know, and you go, well, okay, I guess I can see what you, you know, why you found him not guilty in these instances. But for heaven's sakes, you know, I thought for sure two counts would have been, he would have been guilty on two counts. But I don't want to go back and rehash that again.
I know that there's a lot of these healthcare stories coming out because of the Michael Moore film. But also there's this, is this a Martin Luther King Jr. Harbor Hospital? Is this the place that dumped all the people in an alley somewhere?
No, this isn't the place that's been dumping the homeless folks.
All right, what is this place?
This is the hospital in South Los Angeles that was built post the Watts riots.
Right.
And it's got a long history of substandard care. I mean, nobody wants to work there, so they get whatever nurses or doctors can't get employed anywhere else.
Right.
You know, and that's just the truth. So you have a lot, you know, just last month, this lady who had a perforated bowel just in writhing in agony on the floor of the
lobby. In the emergency room or something, right?
Yeah, and they wouldn't help her. Some lady who was just there with her husband or whatever called 911 from the emergency room for this lady because she was being ignored by the hospital staff, and the cops or the dispatcher on the 911 dispatcher was even giving that lady crap, saying, look, I can't do anything for you. You're in a hospital. But they're not doing anything. It was a real mess, and a lot of fallout from that, too.
What was the hospital's story? I mean, what possible reason did they...
It's for some reason, and it's not through lack of funding. They just can't seem to get up to state and federal standards. And that fish stings from the top. I mean, you know, you cannot have an operation that is that dysfunctional without it being screwed up from the top down.
Seriously.
And I think it's just long overdue that this license is pulled. I don't think it'll ever be pulled. It takes 2 years, first of all, for this process to happen. In that 2 years, the hospital can continue to operate and can continue to make improvements to try and get to state and federal standards. But how it got that way in the first place or why it was allowed to happen for so long, that's the big question running around right now. Why has it been able to do that? They fired so many administrators from that hospital, yet they can't seem to get their act together.
Well, and Tim Riley has noted. Now, is that true, Tim? Is that a thing?
Because of so many gunshot wounds.
Tim has noted that doctors who are going to be working in a battlefield situation are trained at that hospital, apparently, because of the massive number of gunshot injuries.
Yeah, that's true.
And you're talking about, let me just say this, because we've all worked in radio for a long time. Let me just talk about how it takes 2 years to lose your license. I was talking to my wife this morning, and I forget how the subject even came up, I forget, there was something that we were talking about anyway, but she was talking about some I gotta be very careful here. My wife was talking about someone that she knew in another department. And my wife works for the government. And she was talking about somebody she knew in another department who had this terrible coworker who was just, like, doing, like, 100 things that were, like, bad and wrong and, like, unsafe and irresponsible. And I said, well, can't, you know, is she going to be fired? And my wife just said, like, real casually, real blithely, she's like, no, it takes an act of Congress to fire her. And I said, really? And she goes, well, not technically that, but she goes, a congressperson does have to sign the firing order.
Wow.
She goes, I can never, and I said, and I just, I must have looked dumbfounded because my wife just said, yeah, I can never be fired. So, you know, well, you'll always have that. So, I mean, that's kind of what it reminds me of. There's so many of these things. It is just this Cambodia of red tape that you got to hack your way through. So.
Yeah.
All right.
The state did say the process has begun to pull that license, which is basically saying, hey, Ridley, the back door open for you a little bit. I suggest you you take care of business or we're going to slam the door.
It's like one of those where they threaten to come in and take the school away from the city?
Yeah.
All right. Well, do your best to enjoy your weekend. Is it beautiful down there?
Yeah, it's hot, man. It's like 90, 92 degrees out there, so I might have to get in the pool.
Well, say hello to the pool for me. We're kind of a poolless people here in Portland. Not a lot of swimming pools up here. So
you got the rain for you.
That's true. All right, my friend. Enjoy your Southern California weekend. We will talk to you soon, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Jim Roop, kids in Los Angeles. Excellent. There you go. All right.
We come back. Tim Riley is preparing more news for you. We have the top five coming up. Dennis Pitsenbarger, Scott Daly will be talking about Room 1408 and Michael Moore's Sicko. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio. It's the Rick Emerson radio program, 503-733-2970. Still to come, Dennis Pitsenbarger, Scott Daly talking about Room 1408, the new John Cusack film. We got this really weird top five for Scotty. I don't even really know what it is. Is this a mystery top five, Scotty, or is it just... All right, well, whatever. Ladies and gentlemen of the Ministry of Truth, it is the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A registered sex offender has been arrested for shooting guns with teenagers in Beaverton. Police were called to Kennedy Park and a report of people shooting BB guns. When they arrived, two people took off in the woods, two 14-year-olds and 35-year-old Michael Reagan also tried to get away but was stopped by police.
Really?
Yeah.
Taking, although I don't even know where to. There's no joke to be made there, I guess.
Now, Michael Reagan is a registered sex offender and was arrested for violating an order that barred him from having contact with minors. They were shooting at beer bottles.
Who's a registered sex offender?
Michael Reagan.
He's what?
A sex offender.
Michael Reagan is?
Yes.
Michael Reagan is a registered sex offender.
That's correct. The teens are also cited for Beaverton's new law banning replica firearms. They also found two small bags of Mary Jane. The White House is carefully stepping around questions about whether the detainees at Guantanamo Bay will be sent elsewhere and the place closed. A meeting to discuss the future of the controversial prison was taken off today's White House schedule, but presidential spokeswoman Lady Dana Perino said the meeting wasn't canceled because of news leaks.
I think that the decision to not have the meeting happen late in the day after that story came out. But what I can tell you is that meeting was not a decisional meeting. There was nothing imminent coming out of that meeting.
She said nothing.
She's a bad girl. She is. And Michael Reagan is a sex offender.
Perino says they're doing their best to maintain control at Guantanamo Bay. Are they losing control?
People who are tasked with working on this issue every day, not only here at the White House, but at the Defense Department, State Department, and other agencies, to make sure that we're figuring out a way to repatriate these individuals so they can go back to their countries in a way that we can make sure that they're going to be held and not a threat to anybody else, as well as be treated humanely.
Maintain control. They're in cages surrounded by barbed wire.
Yeah.
I mean, really, what kind of control is it that you don't have?
Seriously. Well, they already sent a bunch of them to Bulgaria.
Is that true?
Yeah. That's why the president was over there.
The home of civil rights.
Yeah.
So
there are plenty of jobs awaiting them there, but first they have to learn Bulgarian.
I do wonder, and I mean this sincerely now, I do wonder if this closing of or kicking these guys, getting them out of Gitmo, as they say, is... Okay, now here's a dumb question.
No question is dumb.
No, this one might be dumb. They ever used to say that in school. No question is dumb. But that's not true. There's lots of dumb questions and lots of dumb kids. Here's the thing. So there's Guantanamo Bay. Mm-hmm. And then Abu Ghraib was where? Where was that?
That's in Iraq.
That was in Iraq.
Yeah.
But we didn't take the guys from Abu Ghraib and then bring them to Guantanamo Bay, did we?
No. Guantanamo was open before that.
Okay, but I mean...
It was always there.
They didn't merge the two together. All right. So, well, here's the thing. These enemy combatants, or whatever they're called, that are at Guantanamo Bay, I really do wonder if part of the reason that we are getting rid of these enemy combatants from Guantanamo Bay is because of the Michael Moore film. I really do wonder that because, you know, the people... That might sound silly when you first say it, but... That Michael Moore film is going to be huge. It's going to be a massive... It's already making all kinds of waves. And one of the most notorious scenes in that Michael Moore film is him floating off the coast, looking at Guantanamo Bay with a bunch of... And he's got on the boat with him some 9/11 rescue workers who have been denied health care by their own government. And meanwhile, he's pointing out, hey, if you're an enemy combatant at Guantanamo Bay right now, you get full, top-of-the-line, high-end, completely free health care. And
that'll be great.
So you got to wonder if in a real way the Bush administration is trying to defuse one of the most powerful scenes in that film by getting the issue off the table. And before anybody thinks that I'm just talking out of my ass about this, this sort of thing has happened before. You do realize that about 4 months before the movie came out, before Supersize Me came out, McDonald's eliminated the term supersize from their menus?
I mean, it was right as the media storm about Super Size Me, which was that that what's his name movie. The who's the guy, the Super Size Me
guy? I can't remember his name, but I remember the movie.
Super Size Me with what's his name?
The guy that ate all the food. I can't remember his name, which is too bad.
I keep wanting to say Joe Rogan.
No,
it's not Joe Rogan. Who's the
I can't remember.
Not Lance Henriksen.
There's nobody important.
Who did? Why can't I remember?
I don't know. You have a faulty memory.
Morgan Spurlock.
Morgan Spurlock.
Morgan Fairchild.
Morgan. Nobody supersized anything on Morgan Fairchild. But Morgan Spurlock. The whole huge media campaign was ratcheting up around Supersize Me, and I remember McDonald's preemptively, in what was clearly a PR move, McDonald's removed the supersize from all of their menus because they didn't want those two things to be fused together in the public. So it's not like it's so. And Michael Moore clearly has enemies in the Bush administration because the Bush administration was this is a fact, was investigating his trip to Cuba. I mean, it clearly, like it is a, it is a thing that has happened before. People are calling about Morgan Spurlock, Scotty. We got the answer. Anyway, it's just interesting. I'll be curious to see kind of how that, you know, Saddam Hussein did get full health care there. So it's, you know, it's good that he was, it's good that we gave him a lot of full health care before we cracked his friggin' neck. Mm-hmm. All right, here's Tim Riley.
And we gave him new underwear, too.
Yes, we did.
Remember that pack of three briefs that they found in the... The White House is playing down a flap over Vice President Cheney. And Dana Perino calls this a bit of a non-issue.
But I know, and I'm not a lawyer, and this is an interesting constitutional question that legal scholars can debate, and I'm sure you'll find plenty of them inside the Beltway, is that the Vice President has a unique role in our United States government. He is not only the Vice President of the United States, but in that role, he's also the President of the Senate.
So snap your neck like a toothpick. Bruno said the White House is following
your bones
all
to
the
make
president's
bread.
Documents and all the vice president's documents are safeguarded. They are held. They are held in archives as part of the Presidential Records Act. And all of those rules and regulations are followed.
There ought to be some sort of a porn film called All the President's Men.
Bones have been stolen to make ashtrays. Police say a grave digger stole body parts, including a skull and a thigh bone, from a broken casket at a church cemetery and took them home to make an ashtray. Well, he was digging the grave. A casket was broken open, so investigators believe he took the body parts to make an ashtray or a pipe. Police discovered the theft when they went to his apartment after his wife complained that her husband, Keith Chartrand, killed her dog.
Well,
they also found body parts among his belongings.
An ashtray and a pipe. Well, I guess if you have one, you need the other.
Mm-hmm.
Gravedigger? Oh, my barely knew her thing isn't working. Hi, Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
I barely knew her.
Yes. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, Rick, this Michael Moore thing, I think it's going to be pretty big.
The movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, every Michael Moore film, I think, has outgrossed the one before it. And healthcare, you know, I mean, it's, and this is, the New York Times, I think, said that it was his least controversial, most broadly appealing movie yet. It does seem to be a bit of a, as Hunter Thompson once said, there are issues to which there is only one side, and this does seem to be a subject that almost everybody agrees on,
I do have a strategy, though, for getting health care for people who don't have it.
Hmm.
Just say you need a heart transplant or something like that. Yeah. Oh, if you need a heart transplant, just say you're part of Al Qaeda and they'll come and arrest you.
Totally. Well, no, I mean,
by the time they figure out you're lying, you've had the heart transplant.
And you're in jail.
And they'll give you HBO and Showtime.
Yes, seriously. Thank you. All right. Oh, this is a clarification. McDonald's dropped the supersize menu. Okay, it was not before. 13 days after. Oh, this is even better. McDonald's dropped supersize from their menu 13 days after, 2 weeks after the movie premiered at Sundance. Okay, so that makes sense, because that would have been about the same time that it got picked up for distribution.
Yes.
So that actually makes all the president's members. Thank you. That makes even more sense. All right, here's Tim Riley.
Hank Medras is dead. You're probably wondering who Hank was. He was the singer on The Lion Sleeps Tonight. The guy who's the soprano.
The Tokens song.
Yeah, he was 68.
I'm sorry. I just give it to
everybody. Everybody's sorry.
No, I'm not sorry he's dead. I'm glad that he will sing that song no more.
I still hear it on the radio.
Probably right now.
Yeah.
I hate The Lion Sleeps Tonight. I hate it. I hate that song. I hate it so much.
It'll continue.
I have
for the next 50 years.
Disproportionate hatred like nobody's business for that song. Boy, goddamn. I mean, was that song pre or post Beatles?
That came out in 1961 and stayed number one on the chart for 3 weeks.
thanks so much. But it was post-rock. Certainly it was the post. It was in the rock and roll era that song came out.
Yes.
That just proved that rock and roll didn't fix all the world's ills. Even after Chuck Berry, you still had to turn on the radio and hear the Tokens singing The Lion Sleeps Tonight, which is the most unbelievably irredeemable song. I mean, there's nothing good about that song. It's an awful song.
The group also reached number 15 in early 1961 with Tonight I Fell in Love.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, did you ever, sometimes there's acts like that that have alleged follow-up singles, and yet they just somehow, those don't count somehow. They just fall away as the years go on. I'm sorry, I was reading this email. Rick, I still supersize when I think of Morgan Fairchild. Thank you. All right. Well, let's do one more, and then we got some random crap to do, and then we'll break and we'll come back.
Steve Carell plays Congressman Evan Baxter in the new hilarious comedy, Even Almighty. In theaters this weekend.
Oh, this is the Bruce Almighty, the whatever, the sequel
to
that?
Yeah. His life takes a dramatic turn when God, played by Morgan Freeman, tells him to build an ark in preparation for a great flood. Carell said, despite the plot, the film isn't really that religious.
I don't see it as a biblical comedy. I see it as a fable. I see it as a comedy that is based upon a story of the Old Testament, but I don't see it as like a religious comedy in any way, shape, or form. I think it's a fable. It's a tale about a guy who has to make a huge leap of faith.
At least he knows what it's about. Well, he said he had a zany run-in with a baboon on the set.
And on one take, one of the baboons spilled the lemonade, and I improvised and said something like, "Hey, man, what are you doing?" And I raised my voice maybe to that degree. And the baboon thought I was getting aggressive with it, and it bared its teeth, and it like took a very aggressive stance with me. And after the take, the trainer came and said, "You know what? Don't do that. Don't talk to the baboon."
He sounds like Mike Chase.
That is, he does, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He kind of has that Mike Chase vibe.
Yeah.
Mike Chase is a Steve Carell vibe, one of the two. Sort of the, I don't even know how to describe that. Sort of like a really funny dentist.
Yeah.
I guess. I mean, do you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Mike Chase and Steve Carell, both a very, very clean cut. Very, I mean, these sound like insults, but they're really very white collar.
Yeah.
Just a very white collar, all American, clean cut, Boy Scout kind of vibe, but really funny. And then Mike kill you. You know, like just when you're least expect, just when you're thinking he's the right guy to water your plants while you're out of town.
Well,
cut your head off.
Let's have a clip, shall we? In this scene, God introduces himself to Evan and tells him to build an ark.
Who are you?
I'm God.
You're God?
Yes.
And I want you, Evan Baxter, to build an ark.
Okay, you know what? This conversation is a little thing I like to call over. But I gotta get going. Because, frankly, I have an ark to build. Busy, 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 busy. Nice seeing you. Take care.
That's the clip they chose to sample from the movie. That's not promising.
Having not seen the first one, I'm probably not in a position to judge.
Bruce Almighty?
Yeah. USA Today claimed this was the summer's most anticipated comedy, which
Bruce Almighty was pretty boring.
I guess all that really needed to be said about the story was said by Bill Cosby about 35 years ago. Blah, blah, blah. Insert Cubit joke. It's 503-733-2970. Do we have somebody calling about The Lion Sleeps Tonight? Really? Why? Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Why are you calling about The Lion Sleeps Tonight?
Hi, Rick. I watched a show on public TV one time a couple years ago. That song,
you're on OPB?
Has its origins, like, way, way back.
Looks like it is a tribal song, is it not? Is it not
a song, right. And then handed down through the years and added to and embellished. And the fellow that finally produced it, I guess you could say, some big record producer, this song has made, you know, just kajillions of dollars. And people have tried to rally around it, you know, and kind of get some money gathered for the villagers, you know, who could benefit from this. And I remember
I was just going to say, that's clearly never going to happen. I mean, especially because there is, I'm kind of making this up and kind of remembering it, but I do believe that there is actually a kind of song that is called
The name of the song, it's called a Weemaway. A Weemaway is a kind of song.
Yeah.
And then it was based on a certain chant or a certain whatever that, like, Whitey came along and, you know, you know, sort of appropriated for his own purposes, as Whitey so often does.
I remember in the interview they sat there and he was basically just, you know, kind of pigging out and saying, what, you know, why? Why should I do that? What's in it for me?
Yeah, well, I mean, seriously, there's some guy in the Brill Building in New York. Do you think he cares about, well, you know, well, I have this song that, you know, some guy in the Serengeti plane ought to be getting $4 for. I think I'll send him a check. That's not going to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. And, Rick, real quickly, item two, correct me if I'm wrong, but the story that Tim was doing a minute ago on the vice president,
yeah.
What was it about? I mean, he had the soundbite, but what was the essence? What about Cheney?
Run about him.
Yeah, seriously, I don't know. I'm still hung up on
you're not allowed to know.
I'm still trying to process the fact that Michael Reagan is a sex offender.
Okay. Tim's from the School of Broadcast of If I Told You, I'd Have to Kill You Today.
I suppose.
What?
I said the Tim is from the Broadcasting School of If I Told You, I'd Have to Kill You.
Yes. Yes, okay. Well, we'd send Dick Cheney to do it. All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye now.
I didn't hear one thing of that phone call.
No,
it kind of lost me alone.
It should have ended about four sentences earlier than it did. There was sort of
it was getting too educational for too long.
There was a coda there at the end that was.
That's not the type of program.
No, that Lion Sleeps Tonight song. And again, it's like the guys in the Tokens didn't make any money on that.
No.
I know they're talking about the tribe that originated the chant however long ago didn't make any money. But, you know, the guys who sang it probably didn't make any money. There is some big cigar-chomping bastard in a building somewhere. He made all the money and everybody else got Jack. That's kind of the way that it worked.
He got some little flour and some rice and that was it.
That should have a stove. You know, without Tim Savage here, we won't be having another Stovember, unfortunately.
That is too bad.
Let's see. Rick, there's somebody asking how we can bust on the Spice Girls for being old or bringing Vanilla Ice. I wasn't busting on the Spice Girls for being old. Look, we all get old. What are you going to do? I
was never a fan of the Spice Girls, but I was a fan of Vanilla Ice.
I was a fan of... Well, they're singles, obviously. Not like I'm a fan of their deep album tracks. And you are a fan of the Spice Girls. You love Spice World.
Well, yeah, I like that movie. Well, mostly because Meatloaf's in it.
Yeah, and what's his name from Rocky Horror?
Is Tim Curry in that, too?
No, it's Richard... What's his name? He's the bus driver?
No,
I haven't seen Spice
Meatloaf's
World.
No, Meatloaf's the bus driver.
Is it the manager, then? The guy from... What's his name from Rocky Horror? I'm not the world's biggest Rocky Horror fan, so... But the guy, what's his name, from Rocky Horror, is in Spice World. Somebody will call and fill it in. Anyway, I was a fan of their singles. Wannabe, great song. Two Become One, great song. I can never remember any of that song where they're in the desert being superheroes, but that song, that was great, too.
And there's Spice Up Your Life.
Spice up Your Life. La, 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 la. Hello. Gay. Sorry about that just now. I didn't really just do that. Jesus, God. And that was from the Spice World album, by the way. Girl power. Hello. I am a retard. Anyway, but I, you know what?
Didn't they have that I Want to Make Love to You, like that, some really slow song?
Well, that was the Two Become One.
Okay.
Tonight is the night when two become one. And there's that scene where Emma Bunton, Baby Spice, is sitting in a Manhattan and there's a deer walking across the street. Baby Spice is standing on a street corner in what I believe is Manhattan, and they're doing the weird time photography where she's walking normally, but the cars are blurring by her, the headlights are a blur.
Oh, yeah.
And then she sees across the street a doe.
A deer?
A female deer. And then she's waiting for it to come across the crosswalk to her. And it's like, it makes no sense.
Why is she...
I don't know. And she's in like a nightgown.
That makes me uncomfortable.
It's
Isn't
so
a nightgown
bizarre.
Beckoning a deer?
She's in a nightgown in Manhattan getting a deer to walk across the street to her, where it's clearly going to be killed by traffic. Let me just say this. Whoever, Chad in Beaverton, if I had the chance, if this station could sponsor the Spice Girls coming to town, I'm all over that. And let me just tell you this. The Spice Girls are probably getting back together. They're going to make an announcement on the 28th. If the Spice Girls come to town and if we have the chance to present that, we'll do it as well. So you can lick that, sir, if you don't like it.
This is the showcase of stars.
Seriously, I mean, now here's my thing. Because, let me read this Vanilla Ice email. Rick, I was screaming in my head for you to mention Vanilla Ice's Stop That Train. And then we'll read the rest of this later. But the thing about Vanilla Ice is some guy sent us an email, for which he then immediately apologized. But he was talking about, you know, Vanilla Ice, I've lost respect for you. And here's the thing. I mean, whatever. There's all different levels of musical impact and relevance and whatever. And, you know, I don't think anybody's saying, like, Vanilla Ice is the Beatles or whatever. But
But you cannot, and maybe it is an American thing. Maybe if you are not, if you did not live in America at that time, maybe you don't realize this. But Vanilla Ice had a massive impact on this culture. He really did. And people can say, well, it was a dumb impact or whatever. And, you know, people make all the wiseacre comments they want, but you know that they were huge. I mean, pop culture is the end, the alpha and the omega of this show, and really the station for the largest for most of the day. I mean, that guy, what, to the extreme, sold what, like 7 million copies. I mean, it is one of the highest selling debut records of all time, and it's not like they can force people at gunpoint to buy that. I mean, people went out and bought that record. It had a huge impact, and of course, the Beastie Boys, who at that point were still more of a rock act than a hip-hop act anyway. There was third base, I suppose, but even third base was not, I mean, third base was, you know, they were very pop in their own way, but third base was still, I mean, Vanilla Ice was the first mainstream white crossover rap act. I mean, he's it. It was him. And he just changed the culture in a massive number of ways. You know, and of course, like, I was talking during the break about this, he's like Billy Ray Cyrus. Billy Ray Cyrus, another guy who got the buzzsaw end of the pop culture machine after a while for no readily apparent reason, especially when you consider now that in country music now, every male artist sounds like Billy Ray Cyrus. I mean, Billy Ray Cyrus saw another guy that Some Gave All record, which is his major label debut, sold like 9 million albums or something. And then, of course, one day they woke up and everybody decided they had to make fun of him for reasons that nobody could really clarify. So, you know what? I mean, I respect anybody who has a huge impact on the culture like that. You know what? And there's 100 million people that can sing Ice Ice Baby note for note, which is more than anybody can say about anything I've ever done. So, you know, so whatever. Let's see. Oh, here we go. Here's an answer about Spice World. That's what makes this show great, by the way. Hi, in the mighty Southeast. How can I help you, sir?
Absolutely. So the guy who was in Spice World, who was also in Rocky Horror Picture Show, was Richard O'Brien. He played Riff Raff, the handyman.
Okay, and he is in Spice World. There you go. Because I...
Okay, okay.
So,
and he actually wrote the lyrics and music for Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah,
the creator.
Yeah, he created Rocky Horror, and then I think he was involved in whatever shock treatment or shock therapy, whatever that bad follow-up to the Rocky Horror Picture Show was.
Yeah, that horrible movie that no one ever really saw.
Yeah, I never saw it either. Have you ever seen the behind the music for the Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I have not. I'd love to, though.
It's pretty great, actually, because that guy, it's weird, you know, because he was apparently, that guy was struggling with some, I guess, some personal issues, his identity and so forth, and in a weird way, he says that writing the Rocky Horror Picture Show was his way of coming to terms with, like, who he was as a person and, you know, and his own just sort of personality and whatnot, and, you know, and you talk about a guy that just inadvertently tripped and fell into just this stream of gold. I mean, a guy who just... You know, I mean, it's not like it's a bad movie, but I mean, I don't think anybody, when the Rocky Horror Picture Show first came out, saw that and went, oh, this is going to be a thing that I'm, you know, it's not like I'm even the target demo for that movie, but a thing that is just a massive slice of American pop culture and world culture. So there you go.
It definitely falls into the category of things that probably shouldn't have had a sequel. It was just the greatest thing ever on its own.
Really?
And speaking of really great things, I followed the advice recently on your... their own website and went to the Joni DeRoshi Nerdy Girl Films Cleaning of the Closet sale, got a copy of your one-man show, Bigger Than Jesus, and the B-Sides DVD. It was great. I loved it.
Well, if only CBS did not legally restrain me from commenting on that.
Ah, well, then allow me to say it again, that you can go to, Nerdy Girl Films and... get a copy of the Bigger Than Jesus DVD, which is Rick's great one-man show, and there's also a discount deal going on the B-Sides, which is a separate DVD with more behind-the-scenes stuff.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. I was distracted by a thing.
I think this audience member was planted.
I don't think. All right, well, God bless you, sir. Whatever it is you were talking about, I'm sure it's accurate. Thank you, and thank you so much for clarifying the Spice World thing.
No problem. That's what I do.
Thank you, my friend. All right, 503-733-2970. All right, well, do we have to break?
Yes, we do.
That's too bad. I mean, I'm glad that we're breaking to hear, you know, fine advertisements from some of our many fine paying sponsors.
Yeah, you don't want me to do this.
Oh, is this going to be the punishment if I don't break? All right.
People on YouTube are so weird. It's just a girl standing there in a tank top, mouthing this.
It's so bizarre.
And then her douchebag boyfriend comes running in doing a little dance.
And then her douchebag boyfriend comes in. All right. Oh, I hate you. Back after this.
In the jungle, the mighty jungle, the
The Rick Emerson Show live from Portland. It's 503-733-2970. Just a moment, Dennis Pitzenberger joins us later on. Scott Daly, we did the review of 1408. And I believe Michael Moore's Sicko. I think he just came from a screening of that, so we'll talk about that as well. Flash Friday coming up at 3 with Tom Likas, down to Mike at 7. So forth. Let's get this. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
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 Quick reference here. Had to enlighten you all that in 7th grade, must have been about 1990, my two buddies and I took our girlfriends in a limousine to the Vanilla Ice MC Hammer concert.
Yeah, where at? What was the venue?
McNichols Arena, Denver, Colorado.
Yeah, was it all you anticipated and more?
It was hot.
How old would you have been then?
I was in 7th grade, must have been 13, 14, something.
Oh, great. How much did all this cost? Tickets, limo, everything?
Who knows? The parachute pants made it all. I mean, I had the parachute pants, the shaved eyebrows, everything.
The genie pants. Did you notch one of your eyebrows or both of them?
That's it, man. Well, one, I think. One.
My friend Phil came to school one day because he'd notched one of his eyebrows like Vanilla Ice. And everybody kind of went, you know, and then he just, and the next day they were mysteriously colored in. And then he dropped out of school. So it was, man,
sorry.
So, no, MC Hammer's another guy. MC Hammer.
What was the name of the album? Is it Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him?
Please Hammer, Don't Hurt Him.
Yeah.
Which is, and he'd had a couple singles before that, like he had, Let's Get It Started was his, am I confusing that with something else? There was Let's Get It Started. Anyway, the point is that he's another guy that had, there is a before MC Hammer and after MC Hammer. And the thing is, The guy, turn this mother out. That's what it is. Dennis Pitzenberger. Hello, sir.
Hello.
We'll just bring him now. Turn this mother out. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Turn this mother out. Yeah.
Do, 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 do.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
See, that
guy ran away. No. Turn this mother out. That's what it was. That was on his previous record. There is before Vanilla Ice and there is after. And. I'm not saying that he was like Jesus or something, and he came and changed the entire world forever and ever, and he's the biggest thing ever. But the guys who make that difference, guys who are at that point in pop culture, they're always like that first wave of guys off the ship at Normandy, just mowed down. That's like Billy Ray Cyrus, who was the guy that made the country rock hybrid sound of today, where everything sounds like Achy Breaky Heart. I mean, that guy just got killed for it. They always have a little bit of success, and then they just go down in flames. Ditto for Vanilla Ice. I mean, they always pay the price for that, and then other people follow where they, you know.
Wouldn't you say that their fatal mistake is always that quirky little extra or accessories?
Exactly.
See Vanilla Ice with the notched eyebrows, or Billy's, you know, the giant mullet.
Well, that's the thing with Billy Ray Cyrus. Like, if you ask people now, and it's not like I live my life as some Billy Ray Cyrus apologist, but if you ask people why they think Billy Ray Cyrus is dumb or stupid, they'll always go to the mullet because they've been trained to by VH1 specials. Because it's always like Mo Rocca sitting there going, I don't think you can appreciate Billy Ray Cyrus without talking about the golden, glorious power of his mullet. And so, like, we've all been trained to just make that stupid joke. And there's nothing really, I mean, it's not like Billy Ray Cyrus is great, but there's nothing wrong with him.
What is it?
It's a perfect, Achy Breaky Heart, perfectly serviceable song. It's a perfectly fine song. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a decent song for what it is, but it, like, it has been made into this joke. Like, it's the worst thing that ever happened, right? For no reason, same thing with Vanilla Ice. I mean, he looked silly, but, I mean, really, have you looked at the way anybody looked from, like, 1983 to about 1982? I mean, they all looked retarded. Everybody. Well, everybody everywhere.
You look back, and all I have to do is grab the box that's sitting in my garage that has, you know, about 70 cassettes in it, and start opening up cassette covers and looking at how not only fashion has somewhat become full circle, but I think fashion has the same sort of parallel ideology as music, how things... you could look at some alternative rock from today, and I could pick out little pieces of classic rock bands. Like, you could go for the big ones, like, you know, Led Zeppelin, and you'll hear little pieces in what is considered now alternative rock, right, or aggressive indie rock. And
we're totally full circle. Here's the other thing that Vanilla Ice, I think, was a victim of, and MC Hammer too. Here's something people don't think about. Vanilla Ice, who was so big and flashy and over the top, big glittery genie pants, you know, the I Dream of Genie pants, the big, you know, the stylish hair, or with the overly styled hair, rather, with the big stripe down the middle.
The entourage.
He had like 1,000 backup singers and pyrotechnics and whatever. If you think about it, that was right around the time that Kurt Cobain came along. And everything, not just Vanilla Ice, everything that was pyrotechnics and glitter and because Vanilla Ice and MC Hammer's another guy, huge pyrotechnic, 1,000,000 backup singers, 1,000,000 laser light shows, everything like that, rap, rock, everything, they all went down like wheat before the sickle. Because everything that was big and theatrical got hosed by Kurt Cobain for like 9 years. And it wasn't really until like the Kid Rocks of the world sort of brought it back. Anyway, so that's the other thing about Vanilla Ice, is just wrong guy, wrong time in some ways, because he was big and glam at a time when being big and glam was about to get you killed.
Well, it was weird too, because you and I are only a couple of years apart, but it was weird to grow up in the era where you really saw being in high school, or just into high school at this point, where you saw that, you know, you couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel, but you could see the, you know, the bullseye on the back of the head,
right,
that you saw that massive change in so many different genres of music. It was weird to, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, why isn't my cool members only jacket cool anymore?
Yeah.
When the guy next to me in the, you know, I'm thinking, wait a minute, you're just wearing a flannel. How are you in style?
No, I remember being, well, and Sarah does too, because you were what, 11 when Nevermind came out?
Yeah, I was in 8th grade.
Seventh
grade maybe.
Yeah, and I was.
No, I was in 8th grade when he killed himself.
So you would have been in 5th grade when it came out, because that was 3 years later. Killed himself in 1994.
Well, that could have even been more impactful, because that's when you're really starting to get like your real direction in what you like.
Yeah,
was during the time I lived in Seattle too.
Oh, that must have been. I mean, I was in Spokane. I wasn't in Seattle, but just still, I mean, those shockwaves. I remember, I remember seeing Smells Like Teen Spirit. This whole Vanilla thing has become a Nirvana thing, as everything seems to do when you talk about music. But I remember being home for Christmas and seeing the Smells Like Teen Spirit video for the first time, and just being like, well, and I'd heard about it, but I hadn't heard it. I had heard about it, and I didn't have cable or anything, so I hadn't seen it. And I remember just watching it and thinking to myself, oh, okay, this is something, like, you can feel the ripple in the pond, you know what I mean? And then it was about 2 months, I think, after I saw the video for Smells Like Teen Spirit, that the new, at that time, Bon Jovi record came out, which was Keep the Faith. And I remember, and it only debuted at number 3, not number 1. And I remember there was all of this industry, like, shock. Like, Billboard magazine ran this whole thing about the industry stunned this week when Bon Jovi's record fails to debut at number 1. And I remember it came as no surprise to me. Like, I was like, well, of course. I mean, things have changed. Like, in the course of, like, a week.
Well, that was,
you know?
Was it more,
everything changed.
Was it more of a shock to you to see what came in, or was it more of a shock to you to see how quickly
everything was gone? It was how quickly everything, and again, I'm not like some guy, well, everything was better when I was a kid. Clearly not. I'm just saying it was a huge change. And I remember Bon Jovi, still big, but I mean, they were the biggest thing on the planet. They were the biggest band on earth, except for Guns N' Roses. And but Guns N' Roses were gone by that point, so Bon Jovi was, they were the biggest thing. And I remember suddenly, like, lived a turn of the page, man, and they were gone, and so it was a whole new day. And I remember the next time, I remember that was between Poison records too. Poison had put out Flesh and Blood. The next time a Poison record came out, it was all brown covered. It was acoustic, and Bret Michaels was wearing a brown flannel shirt.
Oh, good Lord.
And I mean, that's right then you just realize, like, okay, things have inexorably changed.
Well,
things are different, and what was is no longer.
And getting made fun of for the Motley, though they've made a resurgence since then and actually brought themselves back from the brink, but to be made fun of for my Motley Crue sticker on back of my Chevrolet with the loud exhaust.
Oh, yeah, my friends had all, it was like my friends, you know, all immediately were like, you know, well, what are you doing tonight? I'm going to the Alice in Chains concert, Rick. And I remember, you know, and just thinking to myself, well,
not so much that.
You know, and I've learned to have a measure of, of appreciation over the years for some of the Seattle music, and it still doesn't resonate with me the way that it did with a lot of people my age. But I remember just thinking how quickly things changed.
How quickly it was embraced. I mean, Sarah, if you grew up in that era and that time, it would have been like, it would have been like one day.
There hasn't been a
change since then. Everybody loved it. There's never been that. I think I know where you're going. There's never been something that's come into the music world that's just taken everything over.
Except for the Beatles. And the Beatles are probably the only thing like that. I mean, because even Elvis was a Southern phenomenon first, and then spread and whatever. The Beatles, though, I mean, there was like one day there was no Beatles, and then the next day they landed at JFK, and like it was Beatlemania, and nothing was ever the same. Or on Ed Sullivan, maybe when they were on Ed Sullivan. I wasn't around, but I mean, I think so. But then, never mind. I mean, just changed. I mean, everything. I mean, not even rap was like that. Even with like Run DMC and whatever, that happened in a lot of little steps. But in Nirvana,
you saw things like the Aerosmith Run DMC thing, but you never knew that it had any kind of potential to go that direction.
I mean,
you thought it was neat because the beats per minute match.
I remember in 1995, people were still saying, "Well, this rap fad," which is and I've already gotten a few of those emails today. You can't spell crap without rap, Rick. I don't even know who this is. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's up?
I was just going to say, you're forgetting one of the main things Vanilla Ice is responsible for, the lines and the hair.
Oh, well, yeah, we were talking about the streaked hair. He had the weird streaky hair, yeah.
Well, remember when they used to shave the line?
I don't think that's
on the side above the ears?
I don't think that's Vanilla... is that Vanilla Ice when he would do the strip? Like, Brian Bosworth did that. I remember Bosworth. I remember Brian Bosworth from the Seahawks, and be impressed by the way that I am referencing a professional athlete.
That's...
Brian Bosworth from the Seahawks did the little three notches. They were like Adidas stripes. Adidas or Puma? Adidas.
Well, I'm an idiot.
Adidas stripes above his ear, and then he would color them Bosworth would notch his hair above the ears, and then he would dye the notches the color of the opposing team that the Seahawks were playing that week. That was his gimmick.
Well, I'm an idiot.
No, you're really not. I'm just saying it was... No, I'm not trying to bust on you, sir. I'm just saying it was a lot of those similar things around the same time. There was a lot of ornamentation of the hair. Because that's
just
when, like, some of the dudes would carve words in the back of their hair, and the hip-hop guys...
Yeah.
The hip-hop guys would do, they would carve, like, there was the Public Enemy logo shaved
like
in the side of your head.
Or something.
Yeah, totally. So,
all right, guys, have a good day.
Thank you. Yeah, I remember, like, the Public Enemy guys, they would, like, Flavor, whoever would, like,
well,
have
the S1Ws had it.
Totally, yeah, in the
S1Ws.
Dork. All right.
Hi, I'm from the 80s.
Seriously.
I'll go splash on some polo.
No, what are you going to do? Oh, man, can I just tell you this? Let me just tell you this, speaking of polo. I don't remember when this was. I was at the store. I don't know the store. I was at the. It was like I had to buy some shaving crap. It was like a. It was like Nordstrom or it might have been Nordstrom. But anyway, so I'm there and I'm buying some shaving crap, and I didn't see like my brand or whatever, like the thing I was looking for. So I'm kind of waiting to ask to talk to the next available teller, and I swear to God, the woman in front of me is there. She go, and it was this. It was the whole lot of. Do you have Dracar? I mean, seriously, full on asking the woman if they had Dracar. And no one has Dracar. That's the answer to that is no. I can almost assure you that they don't have Dracar. It really was like a little bit of a head snap. So,
well, as anyone has ever met me or known me, I have no leash on making fun of myself. But I can remember specifically a core group of friends where if one person had the high dollar cologne a la Polo, Dracar, whatever.
Yeah.
And, when we were going to the old Square Cow Fun Bar in Gresham.
The Square Cow Fun Bar. That sounds like military code. Wisco Tangy, Foxtrot, Bravo.
Better known as Cattle.
Square Cow Fun Bar.
It was just, basically just put your hand out. We all dashed a little and...
You all shared your cologne.
And just went into battle. And obviously we lost many men.
I will have to say this. My whole thing was we had a friend of ours who was a checker at the Payless drugstore.
Nice.
And so if you had a date, you would swing by. And Rob would turn a blind eye while you went down the cologne aisle and just use the testers. Whole line of us, like nine dudes walking down the aisle, handing the tester from one man to another. Because it was English leather or nothing at all. We'll talk about your show here in a second. Rick, this email says, I got a stop sign on the corner of my property and I'm dying to stencil, collaborate, and listen underneath it.
That's rad.
I'll give that. Then.
Now listen to though. He says my wife isn't on board because she wants to stencil stop, or she wants it to say don't stop believing. The stop collaborate and listen is way better, sir. Let's see. I saw Vanilla Ice's meltdown on MTV. It was funny to see him destroy the set and to see Chris Kattan pee in his shorts. Thank you, Captain Geach and the Shrimp Shack Shooters. We don't have time to talk about this today, but we'll be talking about it a lot because we're because AM 970, of course, presenting a Vanilla Ice at 7707, July 7, 2007, at Outlaws Music Hall. There was this. There was this Vanilla Ice meltdown where he went crazy. I mean, he went full-on screaming, swinging something. I think it was a baseball bat.
This when they were retiring the cassette or the tape that was his.
Because they were counting down the worst videos of all time.
Yeah.
And, of course, for no real reason, they had to, put Ice Ice Baby on the worst videos of all time list, which is just retarded.
But is this a video with Janine Garofalo?
Yeah, because even Janine Garofalo said...
It wasn't that bad.
Janine Garofalo and Jon Stewart and Chris Kattan were counting down the worst videos of all time. And even Janine Garofalo said, why are we destroying the video for Ice Ice Baby? She's like, everybody bought this record. Everybody liked it. Maybe you think it's cheesy or corny. She's like, why did MTV build this guy up? And then now they're making money off this program where we're sitting here supposed to make fun of him. To her credit, it's not like he needs to be defended like he's some, you know, whatever. I'm not saying he's had, like, the worst life ever. But to her credit, she said, like, why are we here being paid by MTV to ridicule and destroy this guy that they built up? And they bring on Vanilla Ice.
I have, like, a minute of it here.
They gave him the chance to destroy the video cassette of the master copy of Ice Ice Baby. And you can tell there's some pent-up something. Because he... Because, let's see. I think it's clean, but let's play.
So at this point, to show the entire video for Ice Ice Baby, we won't subject you to that.
And then they give him the baseball bat.
Okay, this is the way the show's supposed to go, but hey, let's just watch it again.
Well, here we go.
Take care of business. My turn to destroy it, and I'm gonna need something more.
Can you pause it for just a second?
Baseball bat.
So the deal is, as they're playing these worst videos of all time, like Party All the Time by Eddie Murphy, they're breaking the cassettes with a bat so they can never be played again. Ha ha. And so they bring on Vanilla Ice as a gag to let him be the one who destroys the master video for Ice Ice Baby. And this was in like 1994, probably, 95. Where
this
he
was that long ago?
It was like 10 years ago, probably.
Wow.
It was a while back. I mean, he had not yet sort of, you know, I think he was still, and apparently maybe he's still not comfortable with the way. It's not that he's embarrassed by the song. What he's angry about, you can tell in this, is he's angry about, which I said, the way that the entertainment industry created him and then just destroyed him. And here MTV is doing a whole show about how badly he sucks when they're the ones who made it. So they let him come on to destroy the cassette.
I don't need any goggles. And to show you that, you know, I'm out with the old and in with the new, I'd rather people focus on, you know, hard swallow, plug, plug.
If this helps you, you can put them against his label.
Don't even need that.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, is this show you? Yeah, this is just, I'm going to give you a little taste of what we do on Swing Back nowadays with the
new. Are you going to throw that up in the air and hit?
No, I'm not going to do nothing that
bad. All right, I'm kind of nervous. I'm a little crazy.
Okay.
Oh, we're good.
My God.
You know what? I'm sorry.
I got so scared.
I feel like I'm getting out there. Can we do that segment again?
Okay, go ahead. And they come back and they do like a, it's not on this video clip, obviously, but they came back and they did like a good 3 or 4 minute talk about like, and Janine Garofalo has said since then, repeated that she was terrified. She said that she felt like he was like, snapping. She thought she said she could see the headlines in her brain of like, Garofalo killed by a bat wielding Vanilla Ice. Because she said that she felt like this is the whole thing. Like there has been 5 years of this guy being under the media microscope and then being made into a laughing stock on television and being ridiculed nationwide. She's like, I figured that we were going to be there on the day that it all like came to a head and he just snapped.
So
he was taking random wild swings with the baseball. I've seen that.
He looked nuts.
That's not a joke. That wasn't staged.
No.
That was one guy letting out a lot of aggression.
Yeah, seriously. So, I mean, all right. But I'd like to leave you with this thought. Rick, you can't spell... I'm just having read that again.
You have to read that. You have to read that.
Remember, you can't spell clown rape without rap. All right. 503-733-2970. Stay there. We're back after this. This is the Rick Emerson radio program. Hello, it's the Rick Emerson radio program. It's 503-733-2970. Flash Friday coming up at Tom Likas at 3 o'clock. Don and Mike at 7. Real quickly, we'll throw it to Tim Riley here in a second. Scott Daly's going to talk about 1408 and then sort of tease Sicko, which I know he saw as well. Dennis Pitzenbarger, miles around tomorrow, 9 to 11, preceded by Car and Driver Radio. What's on the big show tomorrow?
Well, we're going to take a look at GMC's new HD2500. It's their big kind of work truck. It's got a Duramax diesel in it. We're actually going to talk to Gene. There's an oldies but goodies. If you like vintage race car racing, they're going to have that down at Woodburn. We're going to talk to the guys. Pacific Fast Tracks are out at Sunset Speedway. Some industry news. And, of course, check out milesaround.com if you want to find anything about what we're going to talk about. And I know that the one thing I'm going to do this weekend is certainly make a stencil and get some white spray paint so I can go around to every stop sign in my neighborhood.
Collaborate and listen.
Though I will be publicly saying it wasn't me.
Okay, of course not. No. Excellent. All right, ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, the Reverend Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
A Clackamas woman accused of swapping price tags of expensive items with 99-cent price tags at Target stores has been arrested. Heather Bays of Milwaukee allegedly stole items from four Target stores and then sold them on eBay. She switched the price tags on several high-priced items and used her computer to advertise and sell them.
How high could the prices be? She's in Clackamas.
I know. Let's see. One was stolen electric razor, and it was sold to a customer in France.
What do they need with an electric razor in France? I mean, really?
Well, they don't have to pay for health care, so they...
lots of disposable income.
Pamela Anderson has an idea for a new business venture. I thought it would be a great way to celebrate my Finnish heritage at home. I'm going to open up a chain of strip clubs and call them Lapland. She's currently working as an onstage assistant for magician Hans Klock's Las Vegas show.
Wait, Pamela Anderson is a magician's assistant in Vegas?
Yes.
How quickly the worm turns.
Actress Pamela Anderson has appealed... Apparently, she has a new publicist. This is the second Pamela Anderson story today. Actress Pamela Anderson has appealed to Finland to help fur farming. In an open letter, the Finland
fur farming
president...
Fur farming sounds so dirty.
I know.
You and me do a little fur farming?
She expressed her disappointment that more foxes are killed in the country than anywhere else in the world. How does she know that? The Finnish news agency reported the president thanked Anderson for the letter, but indicated it's up to the government to make decisions on fur farming. Finland is one of the foremost fur farmers, along with Denmark, Norway, and the Netherlands. Its annual fur farming is worth $335 million.
What are these foxes fur? Fur farming.
So dumb.
Are we finished with these news stories yet?
Oh, and one more thing.
Come on, give me a little something.
The Paris Hilton interview has been canceled.
Bam!
It was supposedly to be on NBC Today show, apparently. Paris Hilton's people lied and said they didn't collect $1 million for an interview. And NBC lied by saying it didn't offer it. But they outbid ABC.
Fantastic. All right.
Well, your prison pictures will soon be for sale for $300,000.
Wait, no. Is that true or are you making that up?
No, I don't make things up.
Well, okay. Is that true or is that rumored? Her prison pictures.
That is a true rumor.
Well, they're taken by who? Not are these official prison pictures or these bootleg? Do we know?
We don't know yet.
Because here's what I don't want to see. I don't want to be like first shocking photos of Paris Hilton, and then it's like some stage photo where they let her like go into the bathroom first and make herself look decent or whatever. Mm-hmm. I want to see some photo of her crying on a toilet. That's what I want. I want Paris Hilton crying and disheveled while nude on the crapper. That's what I want.
That would be wonderful.
That is the official opinion of the news department of CBS Radio, by the way.
What more could we ask?
No, nothing.
Well, that's going to be... Britney Spears' comeback album may have hit a bump. The singer's rep tells Life and Style magazine, don't ask me where this magazine gets all these scoops, that the record's release date has been pushed back until sometime in 2008. It was supposed to be in the stores this fall.
Well, damn.
She's gone on hiatus.
Okay. Is that true? Hiatus from what, exactly?
I don't know what that is. Is that how you just from life?
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the greatest newsman in the history of the world, Tim Riley.
Oh, but that's not all for today.
Oh, no. He'll be back at 4, 5, 6, and 7, top of the hour, all the way through Tom Likas.
It's a long day.
All right, let's welcome another Rick Emerson show from FilmFeverRadio.com. Scott Daly joining us now.
Hello.
Hi there. Hey, do you know what they make itching powder from, like that they sell in the back of comic books?
I thought it was some kind of hay or some kind of dried grass product.
Well, that's what I thought, too. Listen to this. This is like that story we had the other day. Spiders drink the liquid out of your eyes? I don't know. But how about this? Rick, itching powder is made out of tarantula spider hairs. The hairs are very fine and stiff and get stuck in the pores of your skin, producing the itching effect. I have tried it before, and it does work, although it's difficult to deploy without being a victim yourself. Don't ask me how they shave the spiders, Justin and Lake Oswego.
Shave the spider?
I don't know.
How do you shave the spider, Rick?
I'm too busy corralling the tadpole to shave the spider. Hello. I've seen the future, and all I can say is, go back.
Somehow you should have used the word fur farmer in there, too.
Doesn't fur farmer sound like... Fur farmer sounds like a Yiddish word. I'm all tired and fur farmer. Hello.
I'm feeling fur farmer today.
I've lost my humor. It was just here a second ago. Okay, so I apologize. We don't have time to talk much about the Michael Moore thing.
It's actually my fault. I just got here, so...
Can you give me, like, one sentence on the Michael Moore thing, and then we'll talk 1408?
One sentence, Michael Moore, sicko. Yeah, opens next week. I'll have a forward view next week of it. But in a word, scary as hell. I'm ready to move to France.
All right, then.
So,
I mean, it kind of confirms Mark's everything sure. We already sort of...
No, it's actually very well done. It's probably... I might go on a limb and say, so far, as best film to date.
Well, I mean, I didn't care. Well, okay, yeah, all right. We'll talk more about it. I was a big fan of Bowling for Columbine. I felt that Fahrenheit 9/11 was a little bit of a letdown. In
Fahrenheit 9/11 was very, I don't want to say pandering, but very, he had a point. He made it hit the point home.
There's no rewatch value on Fahrenheit 9/11.
Right.
Totally.
Right.
I don't think anybody has said, you know what, let's sit down and watch Fahrenheit 9/11. Like, why do you ever need to see that film again? It's like a one-time film.
Right.
So, all right. 1408, John Cusack, Samuel L. Jackson, based on Stephen King.
Finally, I am so happy to report that we finally have a good old-fashioned haunted house / room scary film that you go and sit on and get the crap scared out of you. That's what's so great about 1408. 1408, John Cusack plays Mike Enslin, who is a horror writer. He really writes books about debunking haunted houses and haunted house theories. And he gets invited mysteriously to a hotel in New York called The Dolphin and saying, don't stay in room 1408. And so he goes to 1408, goes to the hotel, and Samuel Jackson, who's the manager of the hotel.
No one's lasted more than an hour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then he goes up in the room, and sure enough, all hell breaks loose. And what's great about this film is one, the tension, the buildup, the suspense. You're kind of, okay, what's in this room? What's going to be in this room? Because they're doing a great job of building up the story. Sam Jackson does a great job of telling the story, you know. Since it was built in 1939, 56 people have died in this room, either by suicide or by other means. And, you know, it's really just, I don't go in there. No one goes in there. Just don't do it. And he finally does. And so you're all suspense, all ready to go. There's a great shot of an old-fashioned key going in the door and unlocking it, opens up. And it's a simple room. It's very quiet, very quaint hotel room. You know, and Cusack being Mr. Skeptic, like, yeah, okay, this is scary. And things slowly progress.
Now, is the movie in real time?
You know, the time he's in the room, I believe it's very close. Because you do have a timer of sorts. I'm not going to tell you how a timer comes about, but there is a timer of sorts. And things progress slowly, start to gradually build up. And it's terrifying. There are some moments where I was jumping out of my skin. And I don't scare that easily.
Right.
You know, I'm pretty jaded. But, man, this is a really good psychological... This film gets in your head and messes with you.
Really? Because I was afraid. I didn't want it to be like just a bunch of CG and, that horrible, The Haunting thing with Lily Taylor years ago.
That's the beauty of this film. There's no explanation. There's no big money shot as right. to what's happening. There's no big CGI. There's a little CGI effect right. for effect. But it's really all about what's going on in this room. It's a fantastic film.
And it's out
film.
Now?
It opens today. John Cusack, Samuel Jackson is a very, very small. It's an important part, but it's a small part. Very subdued, very cool, you know, the way Sam can play it. The best part about this, though, is Cusack is probably in the film. 85% of the film is him in the room.
See, I love movies like that. And a movie that's just a guy in a room.
I can't tell you how great this film was. I was so excited coming out of that film. I was terrified. Had a little trouble sleeping that night. I will admit that.
Oh no, but that's a good sign.
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
a great sign.
But it was it is based off a Stephen King short story.
Well, and his stuff adaptations are usually so bad of Stephen King stuff. It's all crap.
His short stories tend to work really well in film.
That is true.
Other ones not so much. But yeah, this is just I cannot recommend 14 to Wait enough. And of course, sitting through the film, I couldn't help but think of Clyde Lewis. See, 1408 equals 13.
Yeah.
13th floor of the hotel. Wait, there's no floor 13. There's floor 14, but it's really floor 13. There's an image in there. I don't want to give anything away, but I kind of wonder what that image is based off. There's something that of a face.
You got to wonder.
It's like, okay, what is that from? That's significant somehow. I don't know what it is. But, you know,
all right, I'm going to go see it. I'm going to see if it
works. Yeah, good stuff.
Let's get just a couple calls, or do we have to break?
We really have to. Okay. If you want to take, like, one.
Okay, we'll take, let's see. Here's what we got. A Poison story, a Vanilla Ice story, or a guy talking about a Vanilla Ice tribute band.
The band Poison? Or Poison?
Number two.
Poison.
This is Flip. Hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Rick, did you just say that your favorite films are those with just a guy in a room?
Let me rephrase. Yes, and then his hot water runs out, and he has to use the neighbors.
Perchance, did I see you run a red light in the station vehicle yesterday near Powell and 13th?
I don't think so.
I think you did, buddy.
Were you driving the station vehicle?
I don't know anything about that.
Oh,
I didn't
know.
No, but I didn't run. I would not know. All kidding aside, now I would not run a red light in the
All I'm saying is, you know, when the layperson masturbates, God kills a kitten. But when the local celebrity does it, they kill something on the endangered list.
Okay, thank you. Bye now.
We're so breaking.
I'm glad you took that one.
That's a promo right there. And the best thing is, it says on here, Vanilla Ice story. Great call. Take this.
Scotty likes to lie to you.
Thanks, Scotty. Or Flip, if that is your name, likes to lie to Scotty. Everything was genius.
If you haven't heard the Rick Emerson Show lately.
All right. Back after this Rick Emerson Show, we'll do whatever we have time for on the other side. You stay there.
The reports of a flying saucer hovering over the city have been confirmed.
We now enter the saddest and shortest part of the listening day, the final segment of the Rick Emerson Show. We want to thank Dennis Pitzenbarger. Check him out, Miles Around, tomorrow, milesaround.com. Is there some?
Milesaround.com, and if you haven't had a chance to already check out Lapland.
Scott Daly, filmfeverradio.com. Don't forget Storm in the Balls plus Cleveland tonight, Dante's, 9 p.m. Storm and the Balls, plus Cleveland, who are damn fine in their own selves.
I can't wait to hear her new stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. This is a little bit of that here, right here. So they got a brand new CD out. Storm Large got a new CD out. Storm and the Balls and Cleveland tonight, 9 p.m. Dante's. We're going to thank CNN Radio correspondents Jim Roop and Lisa Goddard, Scott Daly, Dennis Pitzenbarger, Rick Emerson, Joe, produced today and every day by the lovely and talented Sarah X. Dillon for AM 970 Solid State Radio. In the newsroom, Tim Riley, Scotty J's the PA, the gatekeepers, Dave Zinn. Like us next with Flash Friday, Donna Mike at 7, Miles Around tomorrow at 9. We'll see y'all Monday. As always, my friends, don't let the bastards grind you down. Do try to help the retarded and watch out for snakes.
Did you help the retarded today?
No.
You didn't ride your bike?
Shut up!
Really?
It's a problem out there.
It's broken. It's fixed now.
A little angel lost his wings.
And an endangered animal was killed, too. But that's a different story. All right. Thank y'all for listening. Be safe. Have a good weekend. We'll see you Monday. Bye.
Go ninja, go ninja, go! Go ninja, go ninja, go! Go ninja, go ninja, go! Go, go!